On the Vintage Video Podcast, we'll be reviewing every single wide release of the 1980s in chronological order. Over 250 episodes to enjoy and thousands more to come.
John enters the store now to order another can of ether. I picture him outside like Homer with the gasohol.
One for you, one for me.
I also like to think about that the kids renew their vow not to talk about the murder.
By murdering someone.
They're taking a blood oath with someone else's blood.
This stuff is 7 times more powerful than uranium. And
yeah.
They open up the vault that it's contained in, not wearing any kind of protective gear.
Yeah.
And it's wooden crates.
Wooden crates. It's like the guys in Chernobyl picking up the graphite rocks and going, nah, because there's rocks.
Hugging the elephant foot. Just like, oh, this thing's smooth.
It's so warm.
He turns to dial the number from the classified ad without even thinking about the numbers. We know this because we can hear his thoughts, and he's talking about how AJ was right that ninjas are misdirecting him.
They're misdirecting him.
I really wish that he'd turn to the phone and been like, six. Vintage Video. We're rewatching the 80s so you don't have to.
The road to the gates of Sodom is the road to evil and utter damnation.
You go to hell!
Go to hell! Go to Jesus! Hey!
Welcome to Sodom and Gomorrah. I'll be the operator of your anal probing. Joining me today, my abductee into the unknown realms of sensual delight, the sexy and omnipotent Stephanie.
Hello.
Today, what is today? What are we celebrating today, Stephanie, in this household?
A dual birthday.
Dual.
Is that what we...
Oh, yeah, dual. It is dual.
Yeah.
Me, it's my birthday, and well, it's not really my birthday, but we're celebrating it this weekend. My birthday's on the 23rd.
23rd, your birthday, and Nandor the Relentless.
Which is our little baby ginger cattle dog mix baby. He's a nightmare. But we love him so much.
He is a tough dog.
Every day he reminds me why I didn't have children.
Yeah, he's a lot, man.
I'm like, man, if I had a kid, I'd be beating it, that's for sure. They'd be locking me up. The kid police would be coming. So I'm 41 years old, or I will be on the 23rd. So anal probing is actually close to becoming a reality for me with the colonoscopies and such.
And
it'll be approaching.
Yeah.
What do they say, like 45, 50?
I don't know. They're always changing the guidelines. I'm not really sure. It might be 50, but they might allow it.
When is it mandatory for the doctor to go on my ass?
I mean, does your doctor not do that yet?
No, he doesn't go on my ass. No,
I don't know.
He just smells it. And he's like, it's got a good, he says he could smell cancer.
You mean like a finger, right? So what you mean?
Yeah, he never goes in there with his finger. No.
Do they still do that? I mean, for prostate stuff, they do like the PSA, like the blood test.
And
right?
Every time I go in for my checkup, I'm like, are you going to finger me? And he's like, no, we start the fingering at 45. 45 is when the finger. He's like, you don't have any like a history, family history.
Yeah.
So. Your butthole's good, unless otherwise, but my butthole is not good. And maybe that's why the aliens are doing the anal probing. They just want to, you know, hook you up with like a free consultation.
But how did that start, though?
The probings?
The idea of aliens doing anal probes.
I think because it's like... It's like the no-no zone. So that's right. Where aliens like
that's why they would gravitate towards.
Well, that's what people think. They would want to just go immediately in your ass. Like they don't care about your mind or anything. Let's see what's in the ass.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to find out.
Maybe they don't have asses.
What your food scraps are.
They're intrigued by an ass. By a schlitz.
Doctor,
and a sphincter.
Dr. Nork Zoink removed a couple polyps. We'll biopsy them for you and send the results to your primary care provider.
Oh, man.
So what is a birthday, Steph, without presents? Do you have anything for me for my birthday? Anybody got any gifts to give like on the air? Is there any surprises for me?
No.
Typical Steph.
Yeah, well, tell everyone about the fucking extravagant dinner I made yesterday.
You did make me an extravagant from the what is this cookbook?
Oh my god, I can't think. Eric Wareheim's cookbook. Listen, guys,
Foodheim.
You might know Tim and Eric, but did you know?
Did you
that Eric Wareheim is top notch foodie?
Yeah.
And he has a cookbook. And guys, it's the best.
Me and Steph kind of nerd out every time we see on his Instagram that he's eating like in our old neighborhood fish town. He's like posting stuff. And I'm like, that's our favorite place, Pizzeria Badia. Well,
he's like BFF with Joe Badia, who's the owner.
How could you not be with pizza? Right? So delicious. He's really into food, though. And the book is like hilarious, but serious.
There's a whole chapter that's about ponies and has nothing to do with recipes.
You made the Smashheim, which is like a smash burger, and you made the recipe, and it was fucking delicious.
And Jaime's secret sauce.
And then Steph made me, it's gonna sound like a real old person, but Steph's like, what kind of dessert do you want? And I was like, egg custard pie. And every time I tell people that, they're like, that is so disgusting. I love custard, though. I can't help it. It's fucking delicious. So that was kind of disastrous, but it did turn out really yummy either way.
The custard cake, listen, I just didn't want scrambled eggs in my custard, and
the custard itself was delicious.
It was perfect.
It was perfect. Creamy, had a perfect little feel to it.
Yeah, it did.
Had a good mouth feel, like you're chubbing on like your granny's like extra fat on her butt that just hangs off on her turkey arms that dribbles down.
Well, you didn't even say what I made for dinner.
That's what I was going to get to.
Okay.
What did you make from the Foodheim for my B-Day dinner?
I made the ragu. Which took 2+ hours to make.
Because you had to make the nana sauce.
The ragu is just a very slow process, and it was worth it. It was a meat trilogy, and it was excellent.
So that was Steph's gift to me, but no actual presents, which is, I've become accustomed to this and living with Steph and being married to her and dating her and everything. I've just become accustomed to not getting any gifts from her in any way, shape, or form, but she does provide me many delicious meals.
I try.
So in her own way, she does. She does provide for me.
I try to.
I think food's more important as far as like a day-to-day living standpoint than like, you know, toys.
You buy yourself enough toys.
Do I?
I think so.
It doesn't really matter though, Steph, because my biological construct that my consciousness currently resides in has gifted me my first hemorrhoid. So that's new and different.
Welcome to the world of old age.
It's like one day you're wiping your butt.
Mm-hmm.
Normal.
Yeah.
Just wiping your butt. You pooped, you wipe your butt. And the next thing you know, it feels like you're wiping the top of a baby's head. and your stomach sinks. And you're like, but it's like a baby, like a fleshy protuberance baby that's on like the cusp of your asshole. And I was like, what is that? And I was like, is that a hemorrhoid? And it was frightening and strange because like we just got done covering like two body horror movies from the Cronenbergs.
Right. Yeah.
And then my fucking asshole just decided to go full Cronenberg on me.
Yeah.
My chocolate pocket was like.
It went rogue.
It went rogue on me. My Schlitz. My breaker.
Your Schlitz.
You have a Schlitz and a breaker in the middle.
Or a sphincter. A schnitzel.
Hashtag normalize hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
That's why Vigo. We were wondering why Vigo
was just reclining the entire time.
Yeah, and that it was because of his severe hemorrhoids.
No, no, but what really happened?
I looked on the IMDb after we recorded just for fun and was looking at the trivia for that. And apparently he got mowed over by a horse that wasn't participating in the Kentucky Derby, but it just like he had like quad trauma. So like he basically got like his whole body fucked up.
That's crazy.
Like, I don't know. It was like 2 weeks before filming. So. He couldn't stand for longer than 2 minutes at a time.
Man, that's nuts. Well, he's lucky he didn't get fucking killed. Horses are huge.
And it just goes to show you the bromance between him and David Cronenberg because he's like, I'm almost dead. And he's like, but you signed the papers for my movie, bro. He's like, I'm going to do it. But I got to be on my squatty potty.
I got to be a squatting ninja the entire time.
And I imagine that Cronenberg did buy him like a squatty potty for his like trailer.
I mean, listen, what he was on set. I love my squatty potty.
Yeah. You feel like a gargoyle pooping.
It helps.
I don't need it. I'm too tall as it is.
Well, we've discussed before how I sit on our tall toilet and I can only touch the floor with my toes.
Well,
no one should poop like that.
I really prefer my home toilet to poop in because I bought it specifically because it's the kind of toilet I like to poop in. It's like a big oval.
Tall one with an oval.
With an oval, yeah.
Not the little round guys.
Not like a giant oval. that where you can fall in, but it's like an oval. Yeah. But then you go over to John Ashmore's house where Salem Stain Studios is, and he's got these baby round toilets for, I don't know whose ass fits on them.
My ass does.
Like Ethiopian children. I don't even feel like my butthole is like, I feel like the poop's just going to smear on the lid every time I have to like force myself to take a poop there because there's no other option. It's fucking terrible. And then I can never feel like I can get the proper wipe because I got to keep...
You gotta really lift.
No, right? I gotta keep like, I gotta do this thing where like you spread your butt cheeks open and then you sit down.
Oh, right.
So it
right,
holds
right.
it open.
Yeah.
Because I have a cavernous asshole.
We
so,
know.
So yeah. Otherwise, it's just me pushing poop back into my own ass. Yeah. So on the word of hemorrhoids, I have our first, my first thing I'm gonna talk about real quick before we get into the movies and all that shit. Eat your fiber, kids, by the way. Eat it.
Here's the thing, guys. If you increase your fiber, you also must increase your hydration. Otherwise, it's going to back you up.
You got the cement dukes.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
So dry. So dry. But ever since I've been...
Can we just do a podcast like this where we just like give out like healthful tips?
Yeah. I mean, we can. We can do all this. Me and Steph also have another new podcast that we're brainstorming right now. And it's just going to be me and her. And it'll be on the Sale of Sane feed. But that'll be coming soon. But we're not going to give any reveals yet. But I was talking about this stuff last night. And she's on board.
Yeah.
And it'll be some movies that like we wouldn't be able to cover otherwise.
Right.
In the Godzilla realm. Shh, shh, shh.
Kaiju?
Don't say.
Kaiju?
Don't say. Kaiju. But are you familiar with the creator of Corn Flakes?
Kellogg.
John Kellogg.
There are some fucked up people.
Yeah, so we're going to get into it.
Oh, let's get into it. There's a lot of eugenics mixed in there, isn't there?
Yes, sir. Well, maybe not fucked up people, maybe fucked up person that created a fucked up empire, but let's get into it. So John Kellogg was a businessman, inventor, and physician. But I'm here to tell you that the cereal you have come, you know, Tony the Tiger.
Mm.
You remember when Corn Flakes had the chicken on it too?
Yes.
Before Tony the Tiger.
It was like a rooster. Wasn't it a rooster?
It was a rooter, yeah.
Yeah, I do recall that.
Wake up. Eat your dry cereal.
Well, Tony the Tiger's Frosted Flakes.
But that's Kellogg.
Yeah, but you're saying Corn Flakes. They're two different cereals.
Frosted Flakes is the same. It's just got...
That's sugar. It's got a lot of sugar.
It's got yeah on it. So John Kellogg did not believe in eating meat or consuming caffeine, sugar, tobacco, and alcohol. And you might say to yourself right now, but Kellogg is just makes all this trash cereal mm-hmm. that's just all sugar. Well, let's get into that, my friend.
But basically, he hated life.
Well,
I mean, he hated a good life.
He wanted to be immortal. He wanted to be immortal.
Yeah.
And we'll get into all the reasoning why in a second. But instead, he and his wife ate a vegan diet and were the first to popularize meat alternatives in America. He actually invented the process to make peanut butter.
Oh.
And he was the first one to really make soy milk and make it popular. And he also made a lot of like meat-based proteins, like fake meat. So he was like Impossible Burger in it. When, like, the burger wasn't even invented yet.
Like, when was this? Early 1900s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He actually coined the term granola.
Really?
He based it off a similar recipe that someone else made for wheat, and it was called granula. But when it came time for him to patent the idea, he had to change it to granola to avoid legal issues for trademark. And now granola, no one knows what granula is.
No.
The fuck is granula?
Sounds like scientific.
So he made, basically, granola.
Yeah, interesting.
He was also, and you'll appreciate this stuff, he was the first to believe in intestinal flora and germ theory. So there's a lot of like really progressive ideas that this man had. But then, you know, at this point, you're probably like, this guy doesn't sound so bad. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here's where shit starts to get weird. He was raised a Seventh-day Adventist.
Uh-huh.
And basically, they don't believe in having sex unless it's for procreation. And they don't believe in any kind of self-masturbation. He spent the last 30 years of his life promoting eugenics,
mm-hmm.
even though most of his adopted children were black.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he didn't believe in like interracial mixing. And he also believed that like that mentally defective people should be sterilized.
Yeah.
And he didn't even he was married, never had sex with his wife. They slept in separate rooms. They never had their own children. All their children were adopted and most of them were African-American. But he still believed in all this weird eugenic
could
shit.
You imagine being married for however long they're married and never having sex with your partner?
You don't have to when you have Kellogg's cornflakes. that's the best thing you got. So after he became a physician, when he was a child, he was very poor. But then he got involved in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and they basically paid for his education because they saw he was very intelligent because, like, even at a young age, he taught himself to read, taught himself to write. And then they were like, this kid is going to, you know, he's intelligent. He's going to go and do something.
He's going to be somebody.
Man, I'm going to be somebody. So they sent him to school, escuela.
Yeah.
As the Kellogg's called it. And he became a physician. And then later on down the line, they decided they wanted to open up Battle Creek Sanitarium, which they made him director of. And when you hear sanitarium, you may think, oh, it's for crazy people.
That's a sanatorium.
Sanatorium, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sanitarium at the time was basically like a health and wellness center / European spa. And on Battle Creek Sanitarium, it was 30 buildings on 30 acres. So it was fucking enormous.
Yeah.
And when he opened up shop there, he started to get a lot of, like, more influential people would go there because it was more like, I don't want to say for the rich, but for the more well-to-do.
Yeah.
They started coming in and everything. And he practiced what he called biological living, which was basically all members were to abstain from masturbation, sex, sugar, caffeine, alcohol, and tobacco. Mm-hmm. Nothing fun. No fun times were had here.
No.
To do this, he developed a bland diet, which he thought helped suppress sexual stimulation. And it was basically like you would eat stuff, no sugar, no taste.
Right.
And it was supposed to help you keep all the fucking carnal desires.
You just, like, live a boring life.
All the violent delights just got buried down deep, deep, deep. So he, in a way, he basically created dry breakfast as part of this bland diet. And because of this, many people started to see, like, oh, this is way more affordable than eating bacon and eggs, which is what everybody ate at the time.
Right.
So they're like, this is affordable. It's easy. You don't got to prepare it. You just eat it, you know?
Right out of a box.
So remember how I told you he believed in intestinal flora?
Yeah.
At Battle Creek, he invented what he called the colonic irrigator that was capable of pumping gallons of water into a person's rectum and colon, followed by half a pint of yogurt. And he thought putting yogurt up your ass would make your intestinal flora bounce back and flourish. He was doing Activia before Jamie Lee Curtis. He was the original Activia.
Well, I mean, colonics are still a thing.
So you would eat half the pint, and then the other pint would go up your ass.
Wow.
And then they would meet in the middle.
Right.
And they would just be like, oh, what's up? I came through the poop chute. And then, like, yeah, I came through the mouth the OG way.
And the bacteria would just have babies.
And they would fuck.
Yeah.
And it was just like yogurt bacteria banging was going on. For masturbation addicts, he'd perform circumcision without anesthetic because he believed the pain associated with being circumcised without an anesthetic would make you never touch your penis again.
Holy shit.
In other cases, for people who are older or already had a circumcision, he would wire the penis shut. So I don't know how you would pee, but I guess, like, it would just, your pee would spray out. But I don't really know how that works. I don't understand.
I've never heard of that. That's crazy.
And in the female, he would pour carbonic acid on the clitoris.
Yeah.
Just singe it out.
Wow.
Stamp it out. Now, you may be asking me right now, Steph. I'm sure you're probably thinking.
So many questions.
How did Kellogg's cornflakes become a household staple with this madman behind the wheel?
Right. How did that happen?
Well, actually, it was his brother, Will, who did that. Will was John's younger brother.
And not crazy?
And John... So John was, like, the successful one. Will was, like, the blue-collar working guy.
Right.
And he worked for John, but John always treated him like shit. Like, he was like, go clean. Go do, like, this, like, you know, lesser than
go
stuff.
Go scrub that toilet.
Right. And he worked... He basically worked, like, at the... I don't want to say cafeteria, but, like, where they made the food at this Battle Creek Sanitarium. And so one day Will left. There's a lot of dispute about who was responsible for this. John says he did it. Will says he did it. And then John's wife says she did it. But when it comes down to it, when you think about the lesser piece of shit, it's probably Will's telling the truth, you know, because he was the one that worked in the actual, like, the food place.
Right. The food making place.
Yeah, the food making place where they make their food make. So he left out some dough for the cornflakes. And when he came back the next day, the dough had, like, risen and, like, done all this stuff that he was like, oh, what the fuck? And they didn't know what happened. So he showed it to John, and John's like, you got to try to figure out what happened and recreate it. So Will did recreate it. And when he went to bake it, he found that, like, it made these delicious, light and crispy cornflakes.
Oh.
And he's like, this is fucking great. So they start serving it to everybody there, but, like, a bland version. And Will was like,
and, like, a dry version.
A dry version. Yeah. And Will was basically like, this would be fucking amazing if we just add a little bit. John, just a little bit of sugar. Can we do a little bit? And he's like, absolutely motherfucking no sugar. Yeah. I told you this from day one. So he like went on the side and he's like experimented and he's like, I'm gonna put sugar on this and see what it tastes like. And legend has it that when he sat down and fucking ate that bowl with the sugar on it,
he came in his pants.
He came in his pants, but while he was coming, he shouted, they're great.
Oh,
and he fucking shot.
Nice.
And he had,
okay.
And then he had like a, he had like this like a spirit journey in his head really fast where he pictured himself riding a tiger.
Oh, like,
and he was shouting, they're great.
He was
great.
Listening to like a Dio song.
Yeah. Yeah. Ride the tiger. Yeah, yeah, he was like, jump on the tiger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's like, oh my goodness gracious, I got to start. So he left and he formed his own company. And he started making these Kellogg's. Well, it wasn't named Kellogg's Cornflakes at the time. It was I forget the other name he gave it, but it was like something, something Cornflakes.
Right.
And it became like super popular. And he's like, fuck this. I want to call my company Kellogg's Cornflakes. It's my last name. So he did it. And then John was like, no, you can't use Kellogg's. So they went into court and they battled it out. And John said he invented the Cornflakes. Will said he invented the Cornflakes. And at the end of the day, Judge Mills Lane was like, I award it to Will.
Nice.
And so Will won and he just set forth creating all the breakfast cereals that we know today and still enjoy. So the next time you're eating your Apple Jacks or your Rice Krispies, your Fruit Loops, Honey Smacks, I never liked them.
Oh, I like Honey Smacks.
Yeah, I never liked the texture of them. It was like,
I love all the textures.
It was like honey styrofoam or Frosted Flakes, as Steph said, is different than Corn Flakes. And she's wrong about that. But just imagine sex addict, chronic masturbator, Tony the Tiger, getting his penis wired shut without anesthetic.
Yeah.
And you may see it in a different light. Which, when I read this, I never knew anything crazy about John Kellogg.
I did because I listened to some health podcast, like a medical history podcast, where they have discussed John Kellogg.
And he's done a lot of other weird shit. Like, yeah. He made all these, he was a very like big inventor, as well as a businessman and a doctor. Like he also did a lot of good stuff. Like he figured out things to treat people for hemorrhoids. So I would go see him now if I had to get my hemorrhoid cut off. He did a lot of like good stuff. But also he was kind of batshit crazy at the same time.
I mean, I feel like
religion, religion polarizes.
But I also feel like no matter how many good things you do, when you're like pro eugenics, kind of cancels everything out.
No, you're right.
Right? I mean, it doesn't matter what you could have done something that saved the world, but then you believe in eugenics.
It's usually like that with everything in life. If you're 100% about anything, it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
Like I love pizza, but if I eat pizza every day, I'm gonna walk around with bitch tits and I'm gonna look like a bloater from fucking Last of Us.
And you're not gonna be able to shit.
And I mean, I could shit every time I eat pizza. I shit normal.
If you ate it every day,
I don't know. My body's pretty strong.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. I think the main reason I got this fucking little Cronenberg coming out of me is because of just all the lifting I do. Fucking lifting wood and lifting everything. You know,
I mean, you're swole.
Lifting fucking no, not even that. It's just lifting patients at my last job, and now lifting kids up every day and
those damn kids
taking wood up the tooth floor. It's just that. It's just, and also I'm 40 now, so it's just, you got
almost 41.
When you turn 40, just expect one roid to just come out and say what's up. You
know? I mean, expect something.
Expect one roid, and when you wipe, I'm telling you right now, it's going to feel like a baby head.
Yeah,
it did to me. I was like, am I pregnant? Did Steph knock me up finally? everything I grew to believe, everything I thought was wholesome was a lie.
Right.
Which does bring me a nice segue into my second topic, lies.
Oh, I'm excited.
You know, as the old saying goes, somewhere along the line, there was an old monk who said, those who don't trust cannot be trusted. And I imagine his name was Steven Seagal, but he was a monk, original Steven Seagal, Squinty.
Yeah, not the current Steven Seagal, who's
took his whole shit from this monk. Everything. He's like, I'm gonna be this monk. I'll be a bloated monk.
I was never into Steven Seagal at all.
I wasn't either.
It was always like a battle. It was like, who do you like, JCVD or Steven Seagal? And I was like, fucking JCVD every day, all day.
But Under Siege, that's a 10. Under Siege was a 10. I loved Under Siege. And then Under Siege 2 was terrible, but also very, very good. So shortly after World War II, the CIA set up their first polygraph unit. Some weirdo named Cleve Baxter, it to Cleve.
He sounds like a weirdo.
Decided he was going to use this new polygraph to experiment on plants. Because of this, not only did he come to believe that plants feel pain, but that they're also telepathic. And he published a paper in 1960 called Primary Perception, which was basically because, like, you know, plants have a lot to do with like electrical like impulses and stuff like that. So he thought he could, you know, see if these plants felt pain, so he would like burn their leaves, and apparently he said he would get like this reading on it.
Interesting.
And for the telepathic thing, he said he set up this thing where he had shrimp in another room, and he would kill kill the shrimp. I don't know, brine shrimp? I don't know.
I was going to say, are they live shrimp? But then they were.
Yeah, they're live shrimp. Live shrimp.
Because I was picturing like a shrimp cocktail.
Well, I think he did say he only used orphan shrimp to kill because he was like, they didn't have no future. So only orphan shrimp, he would kill the orphan shrimp. But when he said he killed the orphan shrimp in the one room, the plant, he would get readings that the plant was going haywire. But he wasn't done. No, sir. He had.
But wait, what? But why? Wait, was okay when he? I don't understand the telepathy part of it because
he
said there plants in the room where he killed the shrimp and they communicated with the other plants.
The plant was in the one room hooked up to the polygraph unit,
right.
And the shrimp was in the other room, and they would kill the shrimp, and then in the other room, the polygraph would go off because he could sense that the shrimp was in the other room dying.
Okay.
Is the theory that you're going with?
Okay.
But don't worry about it because it's not true.
Right. Know? Yeah.
But it's just fun to think about. This guy thought it was for real. So he wasn't done. He started using the polygraph on yogurt, eggs, and eventually human sperm, all of which he determined showed signs of ESP.
Oh my God.
His own jizz had to be. It wasn't like he's like, Bill, can I get a load here? I got an empty little honey packet from McDonald's,
yeah.
The little like tub guys.
Yeah, for the nuggets.
Or like a little jelly packet. Took, can you just nut in this? And then I'm going to fuck with your nut. And Bill's like, you're weird, Cleve. You're real weird. Yeah. And he gave it to him anyway. So I don't know. It's just weird. It's like Men in Black shit to me. It feels like Men in Black.
It's so crazy.
Here comes the Men in Black.
Is that the song?
Galaxy Defender.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Here comes the Men in Black. They won't let you remember. You remember that fucking shit?
Yes, now I do.
90s, bro. That was when on MTV every hour of every minute during the year of 1997. And I have to say, shame on you, MTV. Shame on you. All I wanted them to play was David Bowie and El Chicano, Trent Reznor, I'm Afraid of Americans.
Uh-huh.
And instead, I get my face slapped nonstop with Big Willie style. And if it wasn't Getting Jiggy With It, it was Willennium. Willennium or Getting Jiggy With
What's
It.
What's Willennium?
This is fucking album with all those fucking stupid songs in it. When does the madness end, though, Steph? When does the madness end? Where my foldy face Tommy Lee Jones at?
Yeah.
Let's get him out here. Will Smith achieving that kind of acclaim is why lie detectors are bullshit to me. Like George Orwell said, all animals are created equal. Some are just more equal than others. # the Illuminati.
Mm.
What do you got to bring to the table?
Well, I just want to say that I have said this many a time.
Many a.
I do not like Will Smith.
I
feel like it's like people look at me like it's sacrilegious because it's Philly, you know? But
because people like think like you have to support him because you're from Philly. No, I don't. I barely liked Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. If it was on and I was flicking through the channels and there was nothing else on, I'd sit through it to wait for the show that was coming on next that was better, like Small Wonder.
Right.
Because I want to see that fucking little robot baby bitch.
Carlton was enjoyable.
Carlton was great.
Right.
There was good parts about that show. Fat Dad
and
was great.
Dad was great.
Yeah. There's good elements.
Yeah.
But like Will Smith himself,
I just don't like him.
I would have rather watched a show that was called Here Comes Carlton.
Right.
And it was just him trying to grow up rich.
Adventures of Carlton.
Yeah. Here comes Carlton.
Oh my God. Okay. So here's a little quiz for you. And you're probably going to get
pop
it right.
Quiz, maybe. Hot shot.
What is my favorite Easter candy?
The Dove chocolate eggs.
I mean, no.
The little eggs, the mini eggs.
Cadbury mini eggs. Cadbury. Okay.
I didn't know it was your favorite.
That is my favorite.
I thought the chocolate Cadbury mini eggs were your favorite.
That's what I just said.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying.
Okay, but what is maybe my second favorite? Yes. Okay. The Cadbury creme egg.
Why is that bunny clucking?
Right. I still love those commercials, though.
He's a turducken.
You know, the funny thing is I love those as a child, but if you try to eat one now, you're like sugar overload. I can't even finish this.
I mean, I can finish it.
I mean, I do too.
I'm strong. Like I could eat like really all I want to eat when someone brings in cupcakes. I just want to get all that fucking icing in a bowl. I just want to eat the icing.
Yeah.
And people are like, the icing is the worst part. I'm like, you're wrong about that.
I mean, sometimes
throw that shitty fucking cake in the trash.
No, it depends on if they're like some shitty store-bought cupcakes, because then the icing is just too sweet sometimes.
Yeah.
But No, I mean, I agree. I love icing.
Icing.
Just give me a whole tub. Anyway.
It's buttercream.
Have you heard? Buttercream's excellent.
The bird is the word.
Have you heard the story about the man who stole nearly 200,000 Cadbury cream eggs?
Oh, man. This guy's a hero. This man is a legend.
Yeah. Well, he got caught. He's not really a hero. 200,000.
Oh, 200,000. Where? How? From a 7-Eleven?
It was in England. He stole a truck that contained the almost 200,000 Cadbury cream eggs. Worth.
I was picturing him going into 7-Eleven and stealing two at a time. And he just kept, and he did that, like, he extrapolated that over the course of a year. Because, like, remember when Cadbury cream eggs used to be just around, like, Easter?
Yeah.
But now you can basically get a Cadbury cream egg anytime you want.
But that's like pumpkin beer.
It takes it away.
It used to be very seasonal, like limit. Oh, I got to get my pumpkin. It's only here for a month.
And then it's here all the time. And you're just like,
it's not special anymore.
It's not special.
No.
Fucking ruined it.
So he stole the truck and it was worth, I guess, around $37,000 American worth of eggs.
But how much was it in like pleasure?
He didn't eat them because he got caught.
Was his plan to eat them or sell them on the black market?
I don't know. Well, it's funny because I guess
I wish people in Philly would come up to me and be like, yo, you want some Cadbury cream eggs? I'd be like, how much are you selling them for? And they're like, a nickel. And I'd be like, God damn, that's like a 75-cent Cadbury. I guess 7-Eleven or the Wawa's.
Well, I guess the prosecutor in court said, this is clearly an organized criminal matter. And I'm just like so intrigued by that because I'm picturing like the mafia, like we gotta get those cream eggs.
What if they legalized all drugs and then the Mexican cartel had to like make a black market for Cadbury cream eggs and that's what they did. And instead of like people dipping out in Philadelphia, it was just people like sugar overdosing on Cadbury cream eggs laying on the sidewalk.
It's crazy.
With creme. What is the beef? It's because they call it a cream.
Right. So I was going to say,
is it buttercream?
It's fondant, apparently.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense because it's like kind of just flavorless.
But it's very thick. It's just thick sugar.
It's thick sugar, yeah.
But I always was very excited about the little yolk center.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because you're like, it's like a real egg.
It is exciting. It really is. Yeah, that brings you a lot of joy when you're a kid and you feel like, because especially like there was this weird kid, Matt Kitchen Man, on my block. Weirdest name ever. But like he would walk around eating raw eggs all the time. And I think it was just he was weird. And
raw eggs?
Yeah, raw eggs. He would poke his finger through the top and he would like slurp it out.
Wait, this is the kid with the hot dogs in his pockets?
No, that's Matt Schaffner.
Oh, okay.
Matt Schaffner's hot dog kid.
Okay.
Now this kid with Matt Kitchen Man, he would eat raw eggs all the time.
That's disgusting.
All the time. Sometimes we'd be playing for like hours and he would pull an egg that didn't crack in his pocket somehow.
Yeah.
He was that agile. He was like a ninja. He was like an egg ninja. And he would just slurp them down.
That's impressive.
Yolk breath.
That he didn't break. I mean.
He was also a kid that would like knock for me to come out and play at 10 o'clock at night. And my mom would be like, he's in bed. He's 10 years old.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, come, can he come? Because his parents were fucking terrible.
But don't you feel bad thinking like he probably hasn't eaten anything and the only thing in the refrigerator is eggs. And so he's just eating these raw eggs all day.
He's the mom that was crazy. I talked about it like long ago where she was sweeping outside naked.
Yes.
And then she grabbed Matt Kitchen Man and said, show him you got balls, and threw him in front of a car and almost ran him over.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
She
came up to me with the Terminator doll and the Jurassic Park figure and was telling me a Jurassic Park toy was the past and that the Terminator figure was the future.
Oh,
and
man.
Then she told me I should have been a deputy. And then my neighbor came out and said, run, Jesse.
Oh my God.
And I ran. Yeah, I ran to my house.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. It was a good time on my old block fireplace.
I was going to give a little history real quick about the Cadbury cream egg. The eggs, which are made in Cadbury, by Cadbury in Britain, and by Hershey. Did you know Hershey makes them in America?
Yeah, I did know that, actually. What the fuck? What's our boy's name? Jesus Christ, it's been so long since I talked to him. Make Them Die Slowly.
Yeah, he was going to... I mean, they never sent us any chocolate.
He was going to... He promised me I'll send you a care package from Cadbury, because Cadbury... Willy Wonka factory is across from my house. Did.
That's the thing. Like
you Cadbury
can get,
eggs.
You can find
Duncan.
Yes, Duncan.
Duncan, if you're listening right now, you piece of shit, even though I forgot your name for a fucking minute.
You did.
It doesn't fucking matter. I remembered it. You're the best.
We had a great time. VHS
Amy's
Fest.
The best.
Yeah.
If you're still with Amy, she's still the best. If not, she's still the best, but you're the best. And you were supposed to send me stuff, bro.
We just want some fucking crunchy bars.
The fuck,
give
man?
Us some crunchy
bars.
You don't
bars. Promise people. You can promise me a lot of things in my life. Don't promise me food and not deliver.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that was
Don't promise me food. Don't promise me a BJ. Steph knows this. Don't try to take it back.
That's the thing.
When you're tired.
It's true.
Just because you're tired, don't not send me Cadbury cream eggs.
You can find Cadbury chocolate in America, but it's not the same, apparently.
No.
And we can't find the crunchy bars anymore.
And people say this, I mean, I can't really
You can't speak to it?
I can't speak because I'm living in it. But right. From the outside looking in, when people try American sweets, they're like, it's so sugary.
Yeah.
It's so fuck. And I believe that because we are, as a people, insanely addicted to sugar.
Yeah.
Insanely addicted. It's true. It's in everything.
It's true.
It's in shit you don't even think about, you know, like toothpaste. They're trying to get you to eat your fucking sugar in your toothpaste.
Fucking stevia.
Yeah.
Hate that shit.
Put it in the water with the fucking with the fluoride.
Fluoridated water.
They put fucking corn syrup in America in our water system.
Gotta get the high fructose. Because
people want their water pre-sweetened when it comes out of their fucking faucet. We wash ourselves in it. Fucking crazy. You ever take a shower and get some in your mouth and it tastes like granules? You got granules
you get
in there?
The granule, yeah, the granula.
Granule wash. It helps you too. It like exfoliates.
Anyway, so the eggs were created in 1963. And they were initially known as Fry's cream eggs. I don't know who Fry is.
You know what I like better?
What?
The little eggs with the prizes in the middle. What the fuck are they called?
Oh, the German ones?
The German Chris Chickies.
But weren't they like a band here for like a while? Kinder, right?
Kinder Chockies.
Yeah.
Kinder eggs. I think they're just Kinder eggs. Yeah.
Yeah.
They always got a shitty prize in the middle, but it's fun.
Well, I mean, listen, think about the shitty prizes you used to get out of your cereal boxes. That was the best.
It was the best.
Right?
Man, they need to bring back just getting prizes and stuff. Like when I go and get a cheeseburger, there's like an action figure in the middle in like the meat.
Yeah.
you got to bite around them and shit.
Anyway, that's my story. He got caught. It's not worth it, guys.
No, it is never worth it. Except if it's 200,000 Cadbury cream eggs, I would say take the chance. Yeah.
I just would like to know what was his plan?
Well, I hope the judge showed him mercy. You know, because he's like, I fucking grew up on them things. I can see why someone would go to such lengths to get 200,000 of them. Don't do it again. Slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
You know, send him on his way. I wonder if people love Cadbury cream eggs overseas as much as we loved them. I don't know if we still love them. I think it's like it's a child thing.
It is.
It's like when you're a kid, and you get a chocolate covered rabbit. The big ones.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst chocolate ever.
With the hollow ones,
yeah,
right?
When you eat it as an adult, you're like, why would you waste the calories on this? But as a child, you eat the whole fucking thing. Yeah. And the eggs that are full of peanut butter, like 4 pounds. Well, that's the thing.
When you're a kid also, you're just like, you like that shitty milk chocolate. And then when you're an adult and you have dark chocolate for the first time, you're like, what the fuck? Where has this been my whole life?
Mm-hmm. It's true. Milk chocolate is inferior in every way.
It is.
And I don't even want to look at it. Like, when someone hands me like a Hershey's chocolate bar,
yeah,
slap it out of their face, kick it right down the sewer.
I mean, listen, if I'm desperate enough, I will eat it.
If I'm super super craving the sugar, which I am because I'm American,
right,
gotta have it every 5 minutes, otherwise I pass out and start to get the shakes.
It's true.
All right, let's real quick transition into what we watched recently.
Okay.
Only a couple things here. I want to talk about Skinamarink.
Oh, well, you watched it. I didn't. Ooh. I watched 10 minutes
aka Whisper Ceiling, because that's what the majority of the movie is. It's just kids whispering, and there is no shots, regular shots in this movie. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, you watch a movie, it's people, you see your people,
right?
This movie is, you never see you, there's a couple shots where you see the kids, but the hour and a half running time is mainly weird angles of a room,
yeah,
or ceiling, or shadows,
yeah
and kids whispering over it. And I will agree, and I've heard people say, like, if you like horror movies, I don't understand how you can say you dislike this. It's so haunting and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's fine. And I probably would agree with you, because I think the guy has a good, cool aesthetic in this. And I think it would work more. And he's done shorts on his YouTube, and they work way better for like a 20 or 30 minute thing. It's creepy. Right. It's short. As far as it being an hour and a half long, it does not need to be an hour and a half long for the story it's telling. It's ridiculous. It becomes fucking super tiresome and boring because there's nothing to really latch on to. I will give him credit because I think there is creepy stuff, especially how the kids talk, because it is a lot of whispering, but it becomes old really fucking quick.
Yeah.
Cause like the interactions, like you hear like this, like these voices talking to the kids that are stuck inside this house with no way to escape. And it's like, hey, Carly, look under the bed.
I can't. It's dark. I can't see anything.
Hey, Kevin, go in the basement.
I can't see anything. It's too dark.
Hey, listen to me crumple up this piece of paper. It's like ASMR. No. Don't point the camera at me. Only at the ceiling. It's more artsy and edgy that way.
So I have a question. So, okay, so these children are trapped in this house, and are there adults in there with them, or the adults are like communicating some other way?
So,
are they ghosts?
So you hear at one point that the kid is just getting back from the ER because I can't remember, fell or hit his head or something like that.
Right. That's the very beginning.
And
right?
The dad's complaining that, like, you know, you didn't need to take him to the ER. It wasn't that big of a deal. And then the dad leaves and the kids are like, did dad leave? And then you start getting glimpses of like the mom, but she looks like kind of like a spirit or something like that. And then she goes into the closet and you can hear like her bones breaking and her making these. So there is creepy elements to be had in this, but if it was condensed down to a half an hour, I would probably like, that's a really cool short.
Right.
But it doesn't work as a movie. And his aesthetic for me does not work as a movie. And for anybody else, I would say 90% of the population is going to watch this movie and tap out very, very fucking quickly because no one's going to have the patience for it.
Okay.
Is it worth a watch? Yeah, if you can watch it for free. And just like, it took me fucking like 5 or 6 days to watch the whole hour and a half because it was just that grating and annoying to me. Like it, like I said, it wears off almost instantly, the cool aesthetic to the whole thing. And then I started watching Chapel Wait, or Chapel Waif, as Steph calls it, which is based on Stephen King's Jerusalem's Lot. It's on MGM Plus, so nobody has watched this show, but the people who have obviously enjoyed it because it is it's like a 7 out of 10 on the IMDb.
Uh-huh.
And I will say it is not a great show, but it is enjoyable. I haven't finished it yet. I'm like halfway through. It's 10 episodes. Each one's about like 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay.
I think because you're dealing with one of Stephen King's stories that's kind of like almost a short story.
Yeah.
The story is spread kind of thin, and also because of that, they added a lot of exposition and other characters to the story to make it more fleshed out over 10 episodes. But Adrian Brody is in it, and he is actually acting his ass off. If you're familiar with Jerusalem's Lot, then you already know this. But if you're not, cover your ears for a second. But it's about vampires.
Mm-hmm.
It's also tied to like Salem's Lot, kind of. And so the short story, from what I remember, and it's been a long time since I've read it, but it's basically told through like letters, and it's like the main character and his like quote unquote servant that go to Chapel Wait, which is like his family's inherited estate, to fix it up after like his relatives have passed away. And they go there and they find out that the relatives have become like Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. And then they find out that there's this book called Mysteries de Vermis or something like that. And then they start to believe in this God before Christ, which is they refer to as the worm. And in the book, it's very good and it's well done. And it's a short, like shortish story. So you can get through it very quickly. And it's really awesome. I always thought the worm aspect was really cool, especially when they go into the chapel at the end and the worm's like in the floor. So I'm interested to see if they do that with this. They do reference the book. They do reference the worm. The main difference is that like Adrian Brody's character is going to Chapel Wait with his family after his wife just passed away. And he has a sea captain. And he has three daughters.
Right.
And so there's a whole bunch of other elements added to this and characters, like I said, to kind of stretch it out. But I think it's worth a watch. I really, really love the aesthetic and the way that they shot everything.
It's beautiful.
It's super beautiful. It's a period piece. So it definitely feels like of its time.
Yeah.
He's doing a great job, man. I haven't seen him act like this good in probably anything. Wasn't he in The Piano or something like that?
Or The Pianist
Penis, yeah.
He was good in that.
Yeah, he was good in that. He was actually acting. This is kind of like a callback to that. He's actually acting. And the vampires in it look fucking awesome.
Oh, really? I didn't get awesome. To see any of them while I watched.
They look
you.
Awesome, especially like the elder vampire, Jacob. Or Jacob.
Jacob.
He's super, super just, he looks like a corpse.
Yeah.
He's like, and it's fucking, it's really cool. So there is really cool elements in it. And I would say like, if you're into vampire stuff, definitely give it a watch, and you could sign up for like a free trial for MGM Plus and just knock it out and then never get it again. I didn't even realize it was Jerusalem's Lot until I got like maybe like 3 episodes in. And I was like, this seems super fucking familiar. And I was like, is this Stephen King? And then I looked it up, and yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I hadn't heard of. I didn't know it was that was a thing. I mean, I'd never heard of Chapel 8.
And it kind of probably just fell by the wayside because, again, it's fucking MGM Plus.
Right.
There's so many fucking apps and services now for different plus, you know, things that, like, no one's getting everything.
No.
So, but I don't think this is worth getting MGM Plus, you know, paying for it. But if you do get the trial and watch it, I don't think you'll be disappointed. It's got some really good shit in it. And I'll give you a refresher after I watch it and see if they do the worm. Yeah. I'm super excited about that.
Curious to hear.
And we watched Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And I have to say, I wasn't sold the first half hour, but I came to fucking love the movie by the end. And it was fucking amazing. I will say real quick before we get into it, it was probably about a half an hour too long for me. And I think that's where it suffered, because I think if they cut half hour to 45 minutes out of it, and just made it like an hour and a half movie, because it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes, it would have been way, way, way better, because some of the parts just drag.
It does get to a point in the movie where it does drag, but then it picks up again because the ending is really good.
Yes, it is really good. So why don't I hand it off to you, Steph?
Okay. So we watched it. It's from 2022. I mean, there's been a lot of hype about this movie. I think it was up for some awards.
Yeah.
I don't know if it won.
We've been wanting to watch this for so long. We wanted to see it in the theater. We just kept putting it off. And then now it's on Showtime. So we watched it.
So it is about a middle-aged Chinese immigrant who is swept up into an insane adventure in which she alone can save existence by exploring other universes and connecting with the lives she could have led. I think that they did that very successfully, right? Do you think with the swapping of the universes?
It was great, universes? And I will say the actor who was in Short Round from fucking Temple of Doom.
Oh, yeah, I know. What is his name?
The fact, and he may have been doing acting sparingly since, like, you know, those roles. But as far as my knowledge of him, I just know him from when he was young and he was in Goonies.
No, I think we talked about it. Like, he really wasn't acting, and then he got back into it as an adult.
He's fucking awesome.
He is so good.
He is fucking awesome in it. I loved his role was amazing. Him and her.
Michelle, I don't know, Yo? Is that how you say
Yo!
His name?
Yeah, she's fucking great.
She's great. Jamie Lee Curtis. So good in it.
It's really cool seeing Jamie Lee Curtis in this movie, because she's doing, it's not fucking Laurie Strode finally.
Yeah.
It's like, and obviously you've seen her in many, many roles, but she's actually doing something different in this.
Yes.
And she's really, really good at it.
She's great.
She's like a frumpy old lady.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome.
But it's awesome when she changes into her other selves from the other, right? When she you see the physical difference, and then she's like this hulking beast.
Yeah. I mean, if you've heard of this movie, you're kind of aware of it by this point. It's like a multiverse kind of movie where they're accessing, they're in one universe, but they're accessing their other personalities from other universes.
But only certain people can do it, right? It seems like.
That have other talents.
Yes.
And they're pulling them into this world. And they can also compile those talents and get multiple talents from multiple people from multiverses.
Yeah. Well, at least she can. She figures that out. How to do it once, where she can just tap into all these.
But the best thing is to be able to tap into it, you have to wear these weird goggles. But then you also have to do this random act. And it's different from whatever person you're trying to tap into. So it could be like the one part when James Wong's in this, by the way, and he's fucking great.
Yes, and he's great.
To tap into one of the multiverse personalities, she has to wipe his boogies off his face and put it in his mouth. Yes. And me and Steph were fucking dying laughing.
Yes.
And the butt plug scene.
The butt plugs. Holy crap.
They have to put a... That one guy has to put a butt plug in. It's like an award, but it looks like a butt plug. When they first showed up, I'm like, that looks like a butt plug. Yes. And then it actually becomes a butt plug later on where they have to sit on it. And it's just guys throwing their asses towards this butt plug, trying to put it in their ass so they can access this fucking ability that they're trying to access. Oh my God,
yeah.
The raccoon fucking scene.
The raccoon or whatever.
Where it's like the raccoon's like on the guy's head.
It's like Ratatouille. That's what the whole thing was,
right?
It really is.
Because the rat's making him cook really good. Yeah. But in this version, like the rat's under his hat, but like pulling his like hair and making him do all the movements like a puppeteer almost. He's not just telling the recipes. He's actually making the guy move and stuff.
Oh my God. It's so good. And the thing is, like, this movie it's so funny. Isn't it so funny? Mm-hmm. I was laughing. So, I mean, for like you said, you weren't as super into it for like the first 30 minutes, and you kept looking over at me and you're like, you were fucking laughing so hard at this movie. I thought it was hilarious.
I was like, I've never heard you laugh this much for any movie ever. Like, and not even for a comedy. And this isn't even a comedy. And she was cracking up laughing. And it is funny. It is. It takes a lot to make me laugh. It takes a special kind of humor to make me laugh. Usually when I laugh, it has to do with people enduring pain, like it felt like a guy falls down like 14 flights of concrete steps. I think that's funny, but Steph's Her, what she finds funny is different.
Yeah, but the hot dog fingers.
Hot dog fingers was fucking great.
Right?
But it was also great too, because in that universe, when they access that universe, it's her and Jamie Lee Curtis in a relationship together as a couple.
Yeah.
And they have these weird hot dog fingers and they're touching each other's faces and it's just like, and they're playing the piano and stuff. It's just really, I would say more than it being a comedy, it's very, very silly.
It is.
And it doesn't take itself seriously, although it's trying to do like a very heady type of movie.
At the end, it is pretty emotional though.
No. With the drama is very much there. Like it's about like people regretting their lives and then ultimately coming around and seeing that their lives aren't as bad as they thought they were. And that like,
but also the depression and things like, I mean,
right. And it deals with a lot of other things too. Like the daughter being gay and you know, and basically wanting to please your father figure and wanting to please your family and not taking time for yourself. And it's just a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
But at the same time, although it's super heady with all those ideas, like I said, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. It's a really, really good time. I won't say the entire time, because like I said, there needs to be easily 30 to 40 minutes taken off the movie for me to be like, there wasn't like any wasted time.
Yeah.
And to me, there was moments where I was like, my problem with the movie is they go back to like the same idea a couple times.
Yeah.
And you're just like, we did this already. Let's just kind of keep the story going. But also at the same time, it's a fucking great movie. Like, I don't hate it for being that long.
Yeah.
But it took me a while to settle into the movie. But once I did, I was like, I'm here for it.
Yeah. I loved it. I mean, everyone should watch it.
Everyone should watch it. And it didn't make me cry, but I appreciated the themes in it. And
I mean, it was sad. I mean, I know a lot of people. I know people who've watched it and they said they were crying at the end.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. I believe it, 'cause that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
They want you to have that. There's definitely a strong emotional connection in the movie. And I got maybe close to crying, but I wasn't. I wasn't there yet. I looked over at Steph a couple times because I was like, "She's going to be crying," and you weren't. I was actually shocked because I was like, "Steph usually cries. Like, not that you're a crier.
No, but for like, movies, I am.
But for some movies, I've looked over and I see Steph just tears coming down her face, and I'm like, "Oh, Steph, want to lick your tears?"
You know what? I don't know. That made me think of. I know I keep bringing this up because I think I talked about it in the last episode that we did. Station 11.
I thought you were going to say physical 100.
Remember that? Well, I was going to mention that too. Remember that one episode? We just cried the entire episode.
The
one episode was so heart wrenching.
Between that and episode 3 of Last of Us.
Oh my God.
With Ted Ferguson.
Yeah.
I didn't cry for that episode, but I was fighting it the entire time. But yeah, also Station 11, that hit me harder than maybe any television show I've ever watched. It was fucking so well done.
I want
to like go back and watch that and just do an episode on Station 11.
We should,
but that's a commitment because it's like 10 episodes. It's like 10 hours.
I know, but it's so worth it, man.
It is worth it. That's probably one of the best shows next to Raised by Wolves that I've watched, and Last of Us is obviously like crushing it right now.
It is.
You know, I was thinking about for The Last of Us, it would be really fucking awesome for the next season, since it already got greenlit. Abby is like one of the bigger characters in the second season. Mm-hmm. And
second game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, it would be really cool for them to give that role to Elliot Page now.
Yeah.
Because Ellie was modeled after her.
Right.
Before she went through a transition.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a really cool, like, tip of the hat to the fans too, because Elliot Page, I don't know if you've looked, but he's getting ripped, bro.
Yeah.
He's getting fucking shredded.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I want to see him doing Abby in this, because Abby's kind of like, I don't want to use the word butch, but she's kind of like a buff. She's buff.
But she's a little feminine. She's more feminine.
You're not wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying it would be a cool twist if they were to at least
have him as some other character, because there are other characters he could be. But
I think it would be cool to see Elliot as Abby, even if they changed that role a little bit and made it female who transitioned into male. Right.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
And because that's such a strong character that I feel like Elliot Page would do it so much justice and it could be fucking great. And I've loved actually all the deviations that they've done from the game so far.
Yeah.
Because you can't just have a show be fan service. It gets real boring.
Right.
Like, you know, and they understood that, and they've changed things where they needed to change things, but kept stuff in as fan service where they needed to. And it's fucking perfect.
Yeah.
And I told Steph, I was like, I fucking wish I could binge this.
I know.
Cause I would not leave the house for an entire fucking day. And I would just, and I don't have the strength to not watch it and then just binge it all one time.
Oh no. Cause you need to, and you don't want any spoilers.
I wish HBO would give people the option that if they wanted to binge something, you want to binge all 20 episodes. $20.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
But I know they don't do that because they want to keep it going on, but you could make extra money that way.
Yeah. They want you to keep your subscription though.
And I wouldn't do it for much, but if I watched like a first two episodes of something, I was like, I got to watch this all now kind of deal.
Yeah.
I would fucking pay. I would pay upwards of $40.
Yeah. Would you?
Yeah. To be able to watch something like that.
Yeah.
All in one day and just be eating pizza all day. Yes. Yeah. I would fucking do it easily.
Pizza and custard pie.
You got everything cleared off the slate.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about what we're drinking, Steph. What do we got? What do we got in the can?
So you made a little trip to one of our favorite local breweries, Tired Hands, and we got the chocolate-covered strawberry milkshake IPA. It's an ale brewed with chocolate, strawberry, vanilla, and lactose, and it's good.
It's really good. When we talk about a lot of Tired Hands beers and we say what they are, chocolate-covered strawberry, oh, you guys like fruity beers. If you were to drink this, if I sat you down in front of me and said, drink this, but didn't tell you what it was, you'd be like, that's a good IPA. You would not be able to perceive the strawberry or chocolate in it. The chocolate is a very mild, subtle aftertaste. And I as much as I like this beer, I think it's fucking awesome. I think it's delicious. I do not really taste the strawberry in it at all.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how a lot of their beers are. Like they put a lot of fruit into it. But I think the amount of fruit you have to put into a beer to make it overpower the hops in it is just so outrageous that it would never be possible.
Right.
And I think they do a good job with these beers too, because me and Steph really appreciate the taste of like a lot of IPAs, not all of them, but specifically the hops they use in this, which is like Citra,
Mosaic.
And the Mosaic.
Yeah.
Like, we love them. They're fucking great.
Their beer, like at least the beers that we like of theirs, they're never bitter. They have like such a nice mouthfeel. I hate to say that, but it's so
mouthfeel.
It has like a creaminess.
It's like a
nice
pate. It's like a liver pate for your
mouth.
It's
like a foie gras. No, they're good. They're just good beers.
And they're like a higher alcohol percentage too. So like you can drink one and feel good.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be like, oh, I got to drink fucking 16 Coors Light to get a mild buzz.
And by that time, you're so bloated and full.
Who the fuck does that?
Dude, people
do. I will say, and this is a tribute to John Beard Bro. And to a certain extent, I guess, Drew, Coors Banquet,
yeah.
When they drink Coors Banquet and I drink one, I'm like, this is a refreshing, amazing, delicious, working man's beer.
Right.
And I can get down with this. It's like when I go to my dad's.
I was going
like,
to say, your dad.
And my dad's like, do you want a Miller guy? And he gives me the Champagne of beers, Miller High Life. And I'm like, this is delicious. It is fucking spectacular on a sweaty day.
On a summer day with a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Perfect. Right?
But it's like when I'm drinking this, I'm drinking these to really enjoy them and to get like a little good feeling.
Yeah.
When I'm drinking those beers, I'm drinking them because I'm watching a horror movie, maybe because I'm eating some food, but the goal is not to get wasted.
Right.
It's just kind of to just sit back.
Having a good time.
Kick up your feet and enjoy the world. Before we get to the Sodom and Gomorrah guide, this episode, our theme is Kinder Trauma, and we've covered some fun ones on Say Hello Satan. In the past, we've did Watcher in the Woods, Poltergeist, Gremlins, Labyrinth, Willow, and once Melissa returns, Steph, we will do Return to Oz, which I am so excited to cover. I just want to fucking crucify Melissa. Passion of the Christ style.
Yep.
2 hours of me just mercilessly fucking Melissa's shit up and inviting spectators to throw like old lettuce at her, whatever the fuck they used to throw in those times.
Yeah, cabbage.
Cabbage. Right? It was always cabbage. I feel like you wouldn't waste a tomato on someone because it was like, they're delicious.
Tomatoes are great unless they're out of season and then they're mealy. But
Mel Gibson has been saying he wants to do Passion of the Christ too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not even a joke.
How do you do a sequel?
He wants to continue like the story of Jesus Christ. He wants to do Resurrection.
Oh boy.
So he needs to do, in my opinion, MCU type deal, Christ cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Because
there's a market for it.
Because this is no one loves God anymore. People are fucking over God. They're like, God's stupid. Why do I need God when I'm 40 years old and I'm and they're re-releasing Ninja Turtles figures?
And I have a hemorrhoid.
You know? I'm wiping a baby's head every time I take a shit. Yep. Like, why do I need God?
Yeah.
God did this to me.
Yeah.
If God's real, he put the baby head in my ass.
Why did he make your sphincter so loose?
Why did God make assholes so weak,
so susceptible?
Like, if God had a fucking brain, he would have made like the outside of your asshole would have been like a diamond. Like nothing could fucking injure your asshole.
Yeah,
but he made it like, he made our fucking assholes like gummy bears.
He made our whole bodies that way. I mean, hey, if you believe that, but our whole bodies are so weak.
That's true too.
We have a flesh sack that just gets shredded.
Yeah, but if I was to walk around, like if my feet were assholes,
yeah,
my feet would be so fucked up.
Oh, they would.
Because your fucking asshole tissue is like so soft.
It is.
You can't do anything to it.
No, sometimes it's so tender.
And I'm an over wiper too, because like I'm terrified of having streak marks. So I wipe my ass till it's raw. So maybe
that's probably part of the problem.
Maybe that's a play into the hemorrhoid. Because my asshole's like, you gotta stop wiping me. It's too much, Jess.
That's why we're getting the bidet.
Yeah, I can't wait till I can power wash my ass. I cannot fucking wait. So anyway, I was thinking, Christ Cinematic Universe would be Jesus is Tony Stark, and after he gets mortally wounded by shrapnel and imprisoned in Afghanistan, Saint Peter implants the Resurrection Stone in Jesus's chest and becomes powered by the hand of God, and he gets his thing in and he's like powered up by God and he walks to the prison wall and he punches it and the fucking wall collapses and all the prisoners follow him out and he walks from Afghanistan to the ocean and he parts the ocean.
Just the sea.
No,
shit.
And then they walk back to America through it. Probably took him a long time because it's really far.
Well, how deep is it?
It doesn't matter. He's the hand of God. So he parts the ocean. Listen.
Well, I mean, you're parting. You must just build a bridge.
You're fucking ruining this for me. He parts the ocean. Okay?
And he finds the Titanic on the bottom of the ocean floor.
He has to take all the prisoners back with him. Yeah, he finds the Titanic before it sank. Fucking artard. So, all right. Noah is the Incredible Hulk because he's strong and he needs to rip up all the trees to build the ark. And he's building, and you find out he's building the ark for SHIELD so they can rescue all the animals before Galactus comes. Galactus is played by religious Nephilims, the Nephilims, and they're waiting for the Nephilims to come because the Nephilims are going to take pisses all over Earth and they're going to flood Earth. So SHIELD's getting ready.
Okay.
So they have fucking Incredible Hulk building the Ark.
Right.
Moses can be Captain America and he can be like, these 10 commandments are what made America great. One nation under God. Judas would be Thanos, and Judas wields the crucifixion gauntlet. And he is the one that corrupts the Nephilim to come and piss on Earth and create the flood. If the church wants to reconnect with the youth today, Steph, I'm telling you, Christ Cinematic Universe is the way to do it.
Yeah.
But you got to have like a 20-year plan like Marvel did.
You have to.
Iron Man came out in what, 2008?
I mean, you also got to get some.
And we're in the 2023s now and we're still watching Marvel shit.
You got to get some big names attached to the project.
Yeah. I mean, you already got Jim Caviezel.
Yeah.
Or whatever his name is.
He's old now, though.
And what about that guy that played fucking The Witcher that isn't doing The Witcher anymore? And then because he was going to do Superman, and now he's not doing Superman anymore because James Gunn's like, I don't want you. You suck.
Yeah,
what's that guy's name?
I can't even think of his name, but does he love God?
Feather Erickson or something. He's got beautiful feathery hair.
I can't think of his name.
But, all right. What's the Sodom and Gomorrah God?
All right, so first up, Kids versus Aliens from 2022, followed by Child in the Night from 1990.
All right, let's get into Kids versus Aliens. Do you have the director up?
So the director is Jason Eisner, and I'm going to just look to see what he directed.
How about with the shotgun
and Turbo Kid.
He didn't direct Turbo Kid.
Did he not? It says known for, but did he write it?
He produced Turbo Kid. That's
yes,
what it was.
Produced. Sorry. So sorry.
Yeah. Get your fucking facts right. Get the fuck off. Fuck off the show.
It's just, you know, sometimes IMDb is misleading. So, synopsis. An all-time rager of a teen house party turns to terror when aliens attack, forcing two warring siblings to band together to survive the night. I mean, that's not super accurate, though. Like, it is and it isn't. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, also, I want to say, the director is a huge wrestling fan. And has been doing a lot of stuff like that. That's actually really good. He did Dark Side of the Ring, which is fucking amazing. Has all like the crazy backstories of a lot of wrestlers that you've come to love, especially the ones I grew up with. So that's why I thought it was really cool. And he also did, which I didn't watch, Tales from the Territories, which is basically about all of like the different wrestling divisions based on the territories that they came up from in the United States. So that sounds like it could be really cool to watch, so I haven't watched it yet. But to me, this movie is trying to have a nostalgic feel to it. Like, almost like, remember when you were a kid, Steph? Maybe your mom didn't do this, but my mom did it a lot. Mm-hmm. She would cook up a box of mac and cheese.
Like Kraft?
Yeah, and then she would saute a bunch of hot dogs and cut them into a little bunch of little pieces.
Yeah.
Mix them with the mac and cheese.
No, we didn't do that in my house.
And you get yourself a little bit of ketchup, put it on there, fucking delicious. It was not bleh. Do you like hot dogs?
Yeah, but
do you like ketchup?
Yes.
Do you like mac and cheese?
Yes.
Okay, shut the fuck up. You would love it. It's delicious.
I probably would love it.
But I mean, even nostalgia couldn't save this movie for me.
No.
It's definitely trying to. It's not nearly as successful. And when I, the first time I watched Hobo with a Shotgun, I was like, this movie's just trying to do things other movies have done, and I didn't appreciate it. And then again, I went back and watched it and loved it. And then the more I watched it, the more I loved it. And that movie is filmed brilliantly. The fucking characters in it are awesome. It definitely feels cheap, Hobo with a Shotgun, but it never feels like cheap, like where like that's a Halloween mask or something right. Where this movie definitely feels like this is spirit Halloween shit happening right now. And I should have been suspicious when I fucking saw that fucking Bloody Disgusting is distributing it, because not to talk shit about other horror things, but anything I've ever watched but that has been distributed by Bloody Disgusting, let's just say, has not been fucking good at all. It's kind of been trash.
Yeah. I, for me personally, I was thinking that this movie was going to be fun like Turbo Kid, and it was not. It was not fun like Turbo Kid.
It definitely is trying to do the Turbo Kid thing.
Yeah.
It's also trying to do things that you've seen in other movies, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. And this movie, to me, this movie should just, you're talking about a movie that's called Kids vs. Aliens. It should just be, first and foremost, it should just be fun.
Right.
He's trying to be fun, but he gets bogged down by a lot of like sentimental bullshit plot lines that do not need to exist within this realm. Like, if you want to make Kids vs. Aliens, you better bring the anal probings, you better bring the explosions, the gore. And he's successful in that when they get on the alien ship and there's a lot of like melting happening. Yes. I'm like, this is what I fucking want. Right. I know this guy can do good shit. He did. I believe he also did Treevenge. He can do fun, silly shit and it can be successful. But this movie wasn't for me, fam. It was, I found a lot of the characters to be super fucking grating. I felt, listen, I don't care if you give me bad dialogue. I watch fucking bad movies all the time. That's completely fine with me. But when you give me like constant bad dialogue and you're trying to have these characters be like certain stereotypes to like an over extent, it just becomes very fucking annoying to me. Like that bully Billy was just like, he was a bully beyond any bully.
Oh, he was.
To the point where I was like, not only do I hate this kid, but I fucking hate the writing on this kid too.
Because it's unbelievable. You're like, oh, he's gonna murder this kid or like whatever, and like it's just like not believable.
And I think for the budgetary constraints, like I think that's why Hobo with a Shotgun worked, because there was obviously done on a very limited budget and they worked with the budget and made it better for it.
Yeah,
where this movie, they try to do too much, way too much. Yeah. Like building an alien, the inside alien layer, like a lot of stuff was practical. There's CGI in there for sure, but like the alien designs from a distance look creepy and cool. The problem is they showed them up close and they just look like a blow up doll fuck mouth.
Yeah.
and it's not good. And then the aliens pour like this vomit onto like people and they become like these creatures. And even that was like, why does he have Freddy Krueger fingers?
Right.
Why are they actual knives in his hands? Why does he look like a fucking like spirit Halloween orc?
Yeah.
It just like nothing really made sense. And again, I'm cool with that. You don't have to fucking explain shit to me. It can be silly, but it kept moving away from the fun parts and just falling back into these annoying cliches and annoying. Like, I don't care that the girl had a crush on the bad boy and then the bad boy treated her like shit. Like, yeah, duh, we know that. Like, you spent too much time on it, dude. Like, by the time the aliens showed up, I was kind of mentally already out of the movie. And then even when the aliens do show up, although there's like cool little sprinkles of awesomeness to be had within it, overall, it was just like, man, I'm just super disappointed with this movie. Super disappointed.
Yeah.
And it was $7 rental.
Yeah, so was it?
It hurt. Heard it a little bit more.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that like the stereotypes, like the characters are all stereotypes and it's just overdone to the point where you're like, it's, you don't believe it,
which is fine. Like when you're watching horror movies in general, most of the time you're getting those stereotypes. Yeah. And it's fine if it's like done in a certain way where it's like, this guy's that. Okay. But like when you start like pumping those characters up to like on steroids to be a cliche, then that's when I start to really just like find what you're doing to be annoying. And I thought there was cool aspects of it, especially with the kids making their own home movies.
Well, that, do you want me to get into
the wrestling
the story at all?
Nah, not for this movie.
I mean, that was fun.
I don't think there's really bias. When we do Sodom and Gomorrah, we try to go beat by beat through movies when they have, not really beat by beat, but we try to dissect the movie a little more when there's stuff to be extracted. Yeah, like the next movie, we're definitely going to do that. But I feel like if we do that to this movie, you're just going to be bored.
Right.
Because there's not really any, it's all surface level shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, that is fine. It can be like that and be entertaining, but this was not for me. Like, what would you ultimately say? I thought the acting was fine.
I thought, I mean, for being all like kids and teenagers, I guess. I mean, assuming that they're teenagers. I thought the acting was fine.
Yeah.
Like the thing about a movie like this is that usually you care about the children. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I love these kids. They're so funny. They're so clever. They're so adorable. When there's only the one kid that we really liked.
The kid who looks like the fucking guy from Princess Bride.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
What is that little bald guy?
With the lisp.
The lisp, yeah. He looks like a young version of him, exactly. And it's terrifying. It's haunting. Fucking haunting. But like, they act like the kids are going to be the main characters of the movie, which to me, that would have been the more interesting movie. But then they get sidetracked with this story of basically it's focused on the sister being the hero, which is cool and okay, but they almost do like what Terrifier 2 did, where the girl's obsessed with being this hero and she designs the costume.
Yeah,
and
it's very similar.
Is exactly what happens to this movie.
But she's obsessed with wrestlers.
With a wrestler, and she embodies that character with a sword and everything. And then, you know, these kids, they're basically, the whole gist of the movie is this girl's obsessed with this kid. The kid ploys her into like seeming like he's interested in her, only to throw a house party at her house because her parents are rich, and they basically destroy the house. Yeah. And when they're destroying the house with this big house party, the aliens show up and abduct all the kids and start melting the kids down
to fuel their ship,
which is cool. That's awesome.
That's a cool idea.
I'm here for that, bro.
Yeah.
But then the kids get abducted, and her brothers get abducted, and she has to go into the spaceship, which is underwater.
Yeah, in a lake,
to be able to confront the aliens and rescue them, and then they end up rescuing them and coming back to the house, and there's like a final showdown in this barn,
right,
where the kids kind of film their wrestling and their
and little, make their like, movie, the their dinosaur movie,
movie which is really cool. But like, I also felt like the way it was filmed was just really bad. Like a lot of the scenes were. It almost had that Christmas Bloody Christmas feel, where a lot of the scenes were really grainy when it was dark.
Yeah.
But I will say that Christmas Bloody Christmas understood the fun aspect more than this movie did. And this movie drug for me. And it was like an hour and 20 minutes. And I was like, this, your short on VHS2 got to the point way quicker, and it was better off being a short. He was trying to basically make his VHS2 short that he did be a full-length movie, because it's the same idea, and it doesn't work for me.
And it's set up for a sequel.
And they set up for a sequel, the ending. Yeah. You think like the youngest kid who looks like the Princess Bride guy gets stabbed through the abdomen. You think he's going to die, but then the government shows up and puts
some government organization. Hydra.
Yeah.
Didn't it have like an octopus? Like an octopus. Like
they show up and they put all the kids in like cryo freeze tanks. Yeah. And you show them in cryo freeze tanks, and then the credits roll. I'm like, they think they're going to sequelize this?
Yeah.
You really thought this was going to be that? I think like if he scaled back and maybe was like, let's do two aliens that look really fucking cool and just use them. Not show a lot of aliens at the same time.
Right.
Just show them in the background, have it be more creepy.
Yeah.
And then take them out of the lake, because that's just have them land in the woods, because you're creating this whole other extra element where when they had this show the fishermen on the boat in the beginning, that was terrible.
Yeah, it was.
It fucking looked awful.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously it was just out of their scope. Like, it didn't even look like they were using the right cameras for that. Like, when they were out in the boat, it was again, it was fucking grainy.
And the colors and were dark. Weird.
And he was doing this. Yeah. And Hobo with the Shotgun did that with like these weird filters, but it added to it.
Right.
Where in this movie, he's doing it, but it's taking away from it, because all the characters on the boat, all the characters on the boat had orange faces and blue eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Why? So I just think this is a misstep for him.
Yeah.
But I think he still has the ability to make good shit. But listen, you can't always make a great movie. I think he tried and it just got away from
him. No, I think the premise, the idea could have been really fun. And I think, like you said, if they had just focused on the kids battling the aliens, that would have been better.
This feels like
this whole other story. Like, I didn't like any of the characters. Like, I didn't like them. And the whole thing with, like, I think his other thing was like, we want these kids to talk like real kids. So they're just like fuck this, fuck that constantly, but to the point where you're like, it's like almost too much.
But it wasn't funny lines either. Like, if you're going to have kids curse like that, go like the Danny McBride route where you're having them be like silly and raunchy, but with funny lines.
Yeah.
But they're just having them be raunchy, but no real funny. Like, nothing sticks with you as far as like dialogue that's being delivered. And this feels like this was his first movie, and then he made Hobo with a Shotgun.
Right.
But this, like, that's what it should have been, and I would have been fine with it. But this is like Hobo with a Shotgun, and then this, nah, dude, you gotta go back to the drawing board and do not do a sequel for this, man.
Yeah. I mean,
there's no reason.
I don't know that I even recommend watching it, because I was not. I'll say kind of bored.
It'll be on Shudder for free in a couple months, and you can watch it then. And I have a feeling most people are going to feel the same way as me. And there's, like I said, there's fun to be had in this movie, but overall, like, it was just a disappointment. Because, and I think it was more disappointing to me because, like, you could see the potential. Like, you could see, like, oh, they're doing all this cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like, when it starts to slip away from them, it really starts to slip away from them. And then you're just like, I'm out. You know?
Yeah.
But there's some fun.
I mean,
I would say, what would you give it out of 10? I want you to go first.
Oh, God, I don't know. That's tough.
Yeah. Average.
It wasn't below the average. Worst movie we watched with five.
I'd say five. Yeah.
Yeah. Five. Yeah,
I'd say five.
Because some of the practical effects were good.
I wasn't bashing myself over the head for it to be over, but I wanted it to end
like White Noise.
Oh no, this was better than White Noise.
It was also a lot shorter.
You know what's funny about White Noise is White Noise has actually come true, where a fucking train has fucking crashed in Ohio and put all these fucking horrendous chemicals everywhere.
Yep.
And now the fucking government's trying to sweep it under the rug. Yeah.
Everyone's like, it's safe, go back home.
And then they're like, okay, if it's safe to go back home, let's have a meeting about it with the company that spilled it. And the company's like, nah, we're not going to that meeting because it's dangerous. If you want to come to where we live and we can have a meeting here, that's cool, but we're not coming there.
Yeah.
So, red flags.
It's crazy.
And when they're, and if you see fucking dudes in hazmat suits setting stuff up in your riverways that are like designed to like help catch the chemical and, that's not a good sign. And there is going to be fucking reports 5 years from now of a lot of people in the surrounding area from there. Who knows how far it's going to extend, but I guarantee you there's going to be a fucking outbreak of some kind of horrendous cancer, leukemia or something from that shit getting into the fucking water supply. And I'm not trying to be like a conspiracy theorist. This is not conspiracy. This has fucking happened time and time again in history. And it's going to continue to happen because they transport fucking chemicals on trains because it's easier. Yeah.
And if it's not that, then it's oil, which is also dangerous.
The thing that's concerning about it is there is no thing set up where when these trains are passing through areas, they don't have to tell the state that we're coming through your area with this fucking horrendous chemical.
Yeah.
That should not happen.
Well, and
they should know what's going through your county at a certain time. Because what if these things do happen? Then the people who work and live there should know what chemical they're encountering.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So the fact that they're just blindly shipping stuff across this country, that's probably not the best fucking
thing. Well, it's also what happens when you roll back regulations and make things unsafe.
Yeah.
Also,
but now we're on our John Kellogg soapbox. So let's get off that. Unless you want to stand up there and have John Kellogg look up your ass to help you with your hemorrhoids.
Oh my God.
Help me, John. John, I got a baby head coming out of my rear end. Help me with that ball. Do you want to move on to the next movie?
Yeah,
because this movie's the next movie is a treasure.
Yeah. So, Child of the Night. God, I'm trying to, IMDb doesn't even have a synopsis. So I was trying to find it.
Why don't you try to give your own synopsis?
I'll just give my own synopsis.
Oh yeah, please.
So,
please.
Well, first of all, let's
a beat by beat, a synopsis.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about, it's directed by Mike Robe, who, let's see what he's
known
for.
Did you see the
name?
Child of the Night? Child in the Night?
Child in the Night.
1990, and it's available on YouTube for free. It's an actual really good quality upload of the movie, and if you want to buy the movie, Vinegar Syndrome put it out in a box set as part of their televised Terror, Volume 1.
And it's a made-for-TV movie.
Oh, yes.
Which is clear from the get-go.
You better believe it is.
It's so obvious.
At the same time, it's fucking filmed a million times better than Kids vs. Aliens.
Yeah, it is. So basically this director just did TV shit, TV movies, but he did Nightmares and Dreamscapes. That was a TV miniseries in 2006.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, this movie is nothing really to write home about as far as story goes. But the things contained within
are insane.
Amazing. More amazing. What do they call it? The parts are better than the sum of the whole.
Right.
Let's just say that. Because the story is pretty basic, but the enjoyable parts are, it's a very, even though it was released in 90, it's a very 80s movie, and it's a very made for TV 80s movie, which adds this whole fucking delectable deliciousness to
it. Let's tell the folks who is in this movie.
Yeah, tell them.
Jo Beth Williams, who is the mom from Poltergeist.
Yeah, and Poltergeist was before this.
Way before it.
But for some reason, she's more hot in this movie.
Do you think so?
Yes.
It's the reddish hair.
I think so.
Yeah.
She's fucking hot as shit in this movie.
You like when she has a sequin dress
because
on.
In Poltergeist, I'm like, this bitch is beat.
She's just like a...
She look old.
She's a mom.
But then they made this 10 years later. I'm like, this bitch hot. And this bitch young and supple.
And so, she's like 42 in this movie. She's fucking...
Maybe I just like 40-year-olds now that I'm 41. Maybe that's where my brain has gone.
None other than Dry Lips himself. Tom Skerritt.
Tom Skerritt's in it. And let me tell you something. At this point, you would think someone walked up to this ball and was like, bruh, chapstick every scene. I want that chapstick on your lips.
At least some fucking Vaseline.
No fucking way, Jose. This boy's lips still drier than fucking sand and dirt.
He likes it that way.
He must like it that way. Because I imagine his lips are chronically bleeding from being so chapped. Because every scene, it's bad when you see a guy from 40 feet away. And you could see the creases in his lips from them being so chapped.
Yeah.
And it still. Steel. Maybe when River Runs Through It came around, someone finally gave that ball like some fucking... God,
I love that movie.
The chapstick. Remember when the chapstick came out, it wasn't a tube anymore. It was like the jelly and it had like an arched fucking lip to it. Yep. And everybody was like, I need that jelly stick.
I prefer a stick myself.
I did. That was the only time I did use briefly in the 90s. I used chapstick because I just liked...
You like to squeeze it out.
I like the squeegeedness of it. Yeah, the Vaseline-iness of it.
The grandfather is played by Darren McGavin.
Kolchak. For horror nerds out there, you'll know him as Kolchak. If you're a Christmas movie nerd, you'll know him from A Christmas Story. He's the dad.
Yeah, he's the dad.
I think that's the most accessible thing you would know him from, but he is in a lot.
And finally, none other than little adorable baby, Elijah Wood. Oh, he's so cute in this movie.
I fucking hate children. But if Steph happened to squirt out Elijah Wood one day, I would be thrilled. Because that kid is adorable.
And he acts treasure, his ass off.
Acts his ass off. I'm like, where did this kid get these fucking chops at, man?
Right?
3 years before The Good Son.
Yeah.
And his character in this, I just kept thinking of The Good Son the whole time watching this. And Steph, we have to do The Good Son on Sodom and Gomorrah.
Don't fuck with me.
Don't fuck with me. Don't fall asleep. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Oh my God. Okay, so my synopsis of this movie. A young boy witnesses the murder of his father by a hooked man. And he is, the murder's investigated by a detective. They enlist the help of a child psychotherapist to unravel the memories from said child to figure out who the murderer is.
And it's basically, this movie is a whodunit.
It is a whodunit with a lot of twists and turns.
In your typical made-for-movie TV fashion. So when you look at the poster for this movie, fucking awesome. You would think you're watching the most brutal slasher of all time.
It's got like the big hook.
It's a hook. Yeah. It's all bloody and shit. And like Child in the Night's written in like this fucking goth-ass black metal writing. And you're just like, fuck, I'm so primed for this. And then you watch it and it's a made-for-TV movie. So I will say, as much as I enjoy this movie, and I'm just going to say right off the bat, this movie's a 10, all right? For what it is. We're going on a made-for-TV movie scale, by the way.
It's
a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
What? I cannot recommend this movie enough based on what the contents are within. So before we proceed further into spoiling this movie and going through the beats, because we will, because it's fucking great. All the twists and turns. I want you to stop listening right now. Go on YouTube and fucking watch this movie. Because you will just be like, the whole time in your mind, whether it be characters wearing specific clothing, whether it be dialogue.
The misogyny.
The dripping misogyny in this movie. Or just like overall things that characters do that, again, we'll get into. You will just constantly be saying, what the fuck am I watching? Like, I watched it. I told Steph, it's something. It's going to be a fucking great thing to talk about. And then she watched it and she's like, this movie. And then I came home when she got a little further through and she's like, oh my God. And I was like, exactly.
Yes.
Fucking exactly.
So crazy.
So thank God. But Vinegar Syndrome puts out like the very hit or miss because they just kind of just latch on to old stuff and put it out. But I'm glad they're doing the devil's work and really just giving this movie a second life on Blu-ray, because it needs it, man. Yeah. I never even knew this movie existed prior to that. And the only reason I wanted to watch it was because of their box set.
But don't you think that this movie could be done? Could be done. Like, let's say, Elijah, are you listening? Listen to our podcast. Please make this movie.
Elijah,
you could
it.
Be the dad.
Do it.
Be the dad in this movie, or be somebody.
No. Not the dad.
You'd be scared.
No.
He can be, but he can't.
He can be Grampy.
No, he can't be Grampy.
Yeah, he has to be Grampy.
But like, this movie needs some gore. Because it's a made-for-TV movie, there are several murders that happen. You don't see like any blood.
Oh,
really.
No. If this was like a theatrical release movie, you could make this movie just be gore fest.
Yes.
And have it be fucking awesome. But they're dealing with like a $5 budget here for fucking Hallmark movies. So like, they can't do the gore. You get some catsups involved and stuff. But we're not here for that in this version. No. We're here for the absurdity that is Child in the Night. Yeah. So let's get into it.
Okay. So the movie starts off with Elijah and his dad, and they're just having like a great time together. And dad's like, I got to stop by my office because I got to get some papers out of my safe. So they're in his office when suddenly something crashes through a window.
A fucking stork or something.
It's a bird.
Crane?
Some kind of bird with a weight tied to it that you see later when the cops are there.
I thought that was going to come into play.
I thought there was going to be some weird shit where like, somebody's, it's like a thing that like a dead bird through a window is an omen. I don't know.
I thought you were gonna say like the killer always puts a dead bird. He throws a dead bird through a window before he commits something, a murder. That something. Would be awesome.
So the dad like looks out the window and he's like, oh my God, hide, son, hide. And so Elijah is like little, he's like a little 8-year old and he's like hiding behind a chair. And the dad goes out and he confronts somebody like on a dock, right? Because they're by the water.
And this guy's wearing, the dad gets hacked up by a dude wearing a yellow raincoat. The yellow raincoat is such a fucking trope in horror movies where like so many other movies were like, oh my God, the yellow raincoat is the most fucking terrifying thing a person can wear. But there's so many other weird creeper outfits you could go with. Like maybe have the creeper like dressed up like a tap dancer or something. Why not have, I don't know. To me, there's nothing more creepier than like tap dancing. Someone flipping their feet around and kicking and tapping. It's like a sign of mental illness if you're into tap dancing.
Like, I did tap as a child for like a year.
Yeah. I mean, not like a yellow coat that's just designed to prevent someone from getting wet.
Right.
Which, by the way, when I was a goth kid, I could be waiting at the bus stop to go to high school for 40 minutes. If it was pouring rain, I was too cool to wear any kind of rain
gear. Did you use an umbrella?
No umbrella either.
So you would go to school sopping wet.
I would go to school just soaked down to my BVDs. Soaked down to my BVDs. That's a type of underwear, by the way. Whitey.
Yeah,
tidy whiteys. Yeah, BVDs.
Wait, you were a goth kid wearing tidy whiteys?
Yeah.
Oh.
Back then. And then eventually I moved to, I think it was like sophomore year, I got into like
Regular boxers?
No, not regular boxers. Satin boxers. And it was like a revelation because my testes were just rubbing up against this silky satininess. But it sucked in the fucking summertime because satin absorbs all your ball sweat, and eventually what started happening was the crotch rotted out from my silken satinies, like right where the balls are.
Really?
It like right between your legs.
Yeah,
it rotted out. There was like, it looked like Swiss cheese holes were like chewed through it from my ball sweat
from all the chafing.
But I didn't want to let him go. I was like, my mom's like, you need more satin boxers. I was like, mommy, please. I'm only a sophomore. Please buy them.
Oh my God. Okay. So anyway, so your dad gets stabbed to death by a hook, and that's all you see is glimmers of a hook. And so Elijah's like terrified, watching through the window, and he's like, oh God. And he's hiding. And then, so then the cops are there investigating, and he will not leave his dad's body. He's like, I can't leave him.
Yeah.
I can't, crying over his dead dad. And meanwhile, the cops are like, kid, this is a crime scene.
No,
this is our evidence.
Tom Skerritt goes up to the mom. And is like, your husband's dead. A lot of people would say that's a pretty sad day. I'm going to go talk to your son because we've been letting him cradle your husband's dead body for the last five hours. Like, why would you let the kid just stay there?
I know. So anyway, this is when they bring in.
It cuts to the mom, though, at this point.
The mom. Okay.
The mom's like having like a dinner with like this like guy. And she's wearing her like bedazzled little outfit.
That's not the mom. That's the psychotherapist.
Yeah.
She's right. Wearing her sequin dress, and she gets paged, and
her sequin dress looks like aquarium gravel.
Yeah, it does, because it's like teal.
The contrast between the aquarium gravel and her Ron McDonald hair.
Yeah,
I think that's what was just.
It's you
just,
loved it.
Is a strong choice.
Yeah.
For a strong woman who's a mind clinician.
Yes. So she gets called away.
Oh, no, but we got to talk about the dialogue, because you're not going to gloss over the. She's having a conversation with this guy she's out on a date with. And he's like, oh, I'm golfing or whatever. And she's like, oh, you're lucky to have golf clubs. He's like, I've got a club, all right. And I give lessons.
Oh.
And I was just like, oh, damn, he's talking about his Jimmy Johnson.
I did not catch that. Holy shit.
I'll be honest with you. I'm talking about my penis. That's what he should have just said.
So, yeah, she gets called to the crime scene because she was a practicing child psychologist or whatever. So she's reluctant. She's like, I can't do it. I can't do this. You're like wondering, okay, what is her? What's her deal? I can't. You promised me I wouldn't have to.
And she goes there. And immediately, which happens time and time again, her and Tom Skerritt they just go at it.
They're adversaries from the start.
And all I'm thinking is, when is Tom Skerritt gonna moisten them lips on her ovary oasis? Yeah. When is it gonna happen? And boom, almost immediately, Tom Skerritt is doing, like, he's dismantling her mind and mentally disrobing her. Yeah. He's just saying all this misogynistic shit to her, and she leaves or whatever. And then the next day, she's in the office.
Well, first of all, when she shows up in her sequin dress, what does he say? Oh, sorry, you had to leave your prom.
Yeah, he does.
She's a 40-year-old woman.
I'm 41. I have my first hemorrhoid. And he's like, welcome to the club.
Okay,
welcome,
wait.
Welcome to the Cronin butt club.
So
for men.
So she doesn't want anything to do with this, but then the kid won't talk to anybody but her. Elijah. Right. We'll talk to anyone but her. So they start like, wait, they don't.
So the next day, he shows up with her coat, brings her coat, Tom Skerritt at the office. And, she's like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. And he's like, what's the matter with you, lady? Did you break a nail, lose the lottery, or are you just PMSing? And I was like, holy shit. Those are actual lines someone wrote. And I'm fucking here for this shit. But I'm also wondering, like, what happened to her? What happened to Jackie? Why does she hate children so much? You will find out later.
See, I didn't think, I was like, oh, well, you find out she's divorced. And I was thinking like, oh, she lost a child. Cause that's such like a trope in movies. You know, it's like this woman who can't get over the death of her own child, but that's not what happened.
Well, Tom Skerritt's basically screaming at her and he's like, I don't care if you don't like kids. You're going to look at him right in the kid face and listen to all his kid talk. Or so help me God, I'm going to put a kid inside your cooch faster than you can call me cream pie kindergarten cop.
Oh my God.
So she used to be a child psychologist.
Now she's just a psychologist.
And so the reason she's traumatized is because her patient was Culkin from The Good Son.
No, right? Oh my God, I would love that. I would love that twist. So is this when she's talking to him and he's like outside playing?
They go back to the house. So
they have like a mansion because they're rich.
Yeah. And you find out Kolchek, Christmas Story dad, is Elijah's pep-pep.
His pep-pep.
And all fuck, Elijah's talking to dead dad. And you're like, okay, what's going on with that? And he thinks he's Peter Pan. You're doing it, Peter. You're pretending.
Oh my God.
Which is a weird angle of this movie, that the whole Peter Pan thing.
It's really strange.
Because if you take that away, it's just like a regular Bourne movie. But this whole hook,
right,
Peter Pan aspect that gets injected now, I fucking love it.
And the thing is, I didn't catch that at first. But I didn't catch it until, like, I don't know if they introduced it until he screams, Captain Hook killed my father. And I was like, what? Is he just talking about the fact that he saw this guy with a hook? Oh, no. He's talking about, like, actual Captain Hook and Peter Pan.
And he's terrified of Captain Hook now. And I thought it would have been a really cool thing if the fucking, the psychologist just pretends she's taking Elijah for pizza because they were supposed to get pizza with the dad.
Oh, he wanted anchovies.
And she pulls up to, like, a Long John Silver. And she's like, look at the sign. Look at the sign. And she's like, oh, you don't like this? All right, come. We'll go back to my house. I'll make you dinner. And they go back to the house and she pulls a fucking box of Gordon's Fisherman shrimp fish sticks out of the fucking freezer. And he's like, no!
But so basically Elijah just keeps saying, I didn't see anything. My dad told me to hide. But in fact, we know he saw the murder happen.
Yeah, and she's like, Then she tells him this weird story about, like, Elijah, about her doll when she was, like, a kid. I used to have a doll when I was a kid, and I loved it so much. And then it fell down a well, and my mom told me, what happened to your doll? And I told her it was under my bed. And it's so weird. It's such like a weird conversation.
It's really strange. First of all, at every interaction she has with this kid, you don't believe at all that she's a child psychologist.
Well, no. And then also, Tom Skerritt's like, you're not getting any answers for this. I'm going to find someone else. And she's like, why are you going to find someone else? And he's like, well, do you do hypnotism? And she's like, of course I do hypnotism, you fucking idiot. I'm a fucking psychologist. That's all we do.
So, oh my God. That's the best part too. Well, first of all, they jump to that like day one, let's hypnotize this kid. And so they call in her coworker, this guy, and he does the hypnotism. And you know, you believe it at first. Elijah's selling it, man. He's like, he's living in his memories and he's talking, and then he's like, I didn't see anything. I was hiding, like my dad said, can I go get pizza now? Or whatever he says, like he just wakes up. He's not even hypnotized. Yeah. He's faking it the whole time.
But the best part is when they hypnotize him, he starts reliving glimpses of like he's Peter Pan.
Yeah.
In these things, he's dressed up like Peter Pan and he keeps seeing Captain Hook, but Captain Hook looks like if Benny Graves was a pirate. Like he looks fucking, and it looks like what was that fucking show called with like her kids?
Fat Albert? No, not Fat Albert. Uncle Albert.
Captain. No. Remember that show on Channel 12, and it was like the guy on the boat, Captain.
Oh, I can't.
Captain
I know.
Captain Nimoy? No.
Captain Nimoy. I know what you're talking about, but it's just so creepy. And the guy has like this curly wig.
When they do the reenactments, it's so low budget, right? It looks like Sesame Street, reenactments something.
Yeah.
Like a kids play or something like that. Like, so like a production you saw in high school, something like that.
Yes.
It's fucking awful. So then they break up the thing or whatever. And then later on, Skerritt's like arguing with the hypnotherapist in the car. And like, what's your deal? You know, what's going on? Like,
what's wrong with you?
And she's like, do you ever hear of Coolidge Elementary School? And he's like, oh yeah, the plane that crashed in front of the children. She's like, not in front of them, on them. And I fucking like almost lost my mind, fucking cracking up laughing. Like, first of all, if he's aware of the events of Coolidge Elementary School, you would assume he knows that like multiple children were killed in it, like horrifically.
Yeah.
Not that like the plane crashed in front of them and the kids were like, ah!
Yeah.
No, she's like, the fucking children were all fucked up and on the swing set with a torso.
No, what she said, she's like, the one little girl, when she finally found her sister, the body was trapped in the chains and there was no head. It was trapped in the chains.
The head was in the basketball net. They did a slam dunk.
Oh my God. But the whole trauma, though, is like, that was traumatic for her. But the fucking killer is that one of her patients, a 12-year-old, fucking committed suicide. Mm. And that's why she stopped practicing child psychology.
So then it pivots from that, and it's Elijah running out of his house because he's trying to run away, and he gets fucking run over by a car.
By a car.
And it cuts to the hospital, and she's like, oh man, you could have been killed if you got with that car accident. He's like, maybe.
No, she says to him, because she's still traumatized by this suicide. She says, I have to ask you a question. Did you run out in front of that car on purpose? And he says, no, but maybe it would have been better if I had.
Because I could have saw my dad again.
What the fuck?
And I would have been like, you wouldn't see your dad again. Oh, you would just be worm food, little Elijah.
Oh my God. So crazy.
But as this is all going on, you get cuts of like him reliving the murder of like Dr. Benny Graves, Dustin Hoffman, looking through like windows, and he's
tied to like a ship.
Apparently, it's so that guy that plays that is, this is like a really, it's out of my league as far as like nerd shit, but it's like a big gamer thing. Gamers know this guy. He did voices for Star Fox 64.
Okay.
So all the nerds are like, oh my God, that's the guy who did like Jumpy the Rabbit and Star Fox. I don't know what his fucking name is.
I never played that. I mean, I know of the game, but I've never played it. But we also get some backstory too. We find out that like, so they're trying to figure out like, what were these papers that the dad was trying to get, right? So the dad has all these friends, business partners, and everyone's like, he loved everyone. Everyone loved him. And then the one guy's like, he was going to give me a share of the business. So that's, so you're like, oh, did he kill him? Is he a suspect?
And then like the one woman business partner is very shady too, because she's like, we used to date him.
Yeah.
So it's like all these like whodunit.
Right. And then also there's like this receptionist or secretary who was fired, and then the wife thought they were having an affair.
So as this is all going on, slowly Tom Skerritt and Joe Beth are like forming this relationship, like the psychologist woman are forming, like they're slowly like starting to get into each other's pants almost.
Yeah.
And
well, she tries.
She's like What's the T for in your... This is actually happening.
Oh my God,
what's a T for in your middle name? And he's like, my middle name's Thurston. I was like, why did we need this in the movie?
You know what I thought of when he said that for some reason? Thurman Merman. Oh,
I wish he was like, my middle name's Thurston, and I'm Thurston for that pussy piss. That's what I wish he would have said. But then he makes her wait because she's basically like, I don't want to have an emotional connection with someone. I just want to fuck. And he's like, not tonight. But maybe another time. Yeah. And he like,
and he leaves
in
her.
No fucking world would that happen. But I guess like the reasoning for it was he was probably like, if I make her wait, maybe she'll get more horny and she'll give up the butthole. but also he's just trying to do his job and she's just like a horny cock slut.
Oh my God.
Like she's just like, give me that dick.
No, but this is the thing too about that. It's very like of its time because he just shows up at her fucking house. No one just shows up at anybody's house anymore.
Well, he also says like asshole things to her all the time. He's like, oh, I see you're drinking by yourself. Yeah. And she's like, do you want a drink? And he's like, yes. Yeah. Like, why are you judging her if you're going to fucking have a drink too?
I know.
Piece of shit. Oh my God. This is my favorite part of the fucking movie. So basically they end up having like kind of sort of a relationship. And so he's taking her to like all the, to like a lot of the investigation parts. Right. And they're, I believe it's when they're leaving the secretary's house when they like assume they like suspect her of being like having a hand.
Wait, you don't want to talk about when he takes her on the boat picnic?
Oh, we'll talk. We can talk about that afterwards. Okay, it doesn't matter if we jump around, but because I want to talk about this because I just popped in my head, but it's so fucking funny when they're leaving and she there's a point where she's talking to Elijah and Elijah says like she did it and he's like Joe Beth's like. I don't know if he's saying she or if he's getting it confused with Smee.
Smee, yeah.
From fucking Hulk. I was like, oh my God, are you fucking serious? Because it's like the writer's trying to be like, it could still be a man.
Right.
Because maybe he said Smee and not fucking
Well, because he did. He was talking about Smee a bunch of times. But
I fucking lost it.
Oh my God, so funny. Yeah, but then Tom Skerritt takes her on this. He's like, come to my house. And then he like packs this fucking extravagant lunch with like Cornish hens and I don't even know fucking pate.
Cornish hens ridiculous because I'm like no one's eating Cornish hen on like a boat that's going down the river where it smells like shit and it's cold out because they're wearing coats.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a nice boat. It was a police boat.
And she doesn't even eat it. She like eats like the
she
like
touches it.
She eats like the taters that are around the Cornish hen or something like that. And she likes and then she like does this thing where she cleans her teeth with her finger. I'm like, ew.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Don't fucking wipe that Cornish hen fucking jizz off your teeth. That's fucking sick.
Yeah, so they like they talk to the grandpop and then he's all like, oh, I don't know, were they having an affair? And he's like that's when I started to like, I was thinking he was a shady character, just the way he acted in that whole interaction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so after they interview the secretary, they don't believe her. They're like, she's lying. Cause she's just like, I was sick. He didn't fire me. Oh, we weren't having an affair, blah, 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 blah. But then she goes back there. Right. Cause like, she's like, so Jo Beth gets involved. She's like trying to help Elijah remember. And she's doing art therapy where he's drawing all these pictures of like Peter Pan. And like, but he's like, I can't talk about Captain Hook. I can't talk about the cabin. I can't talk about it. And then Tom Skerritt's just like, fucking kid, you better tell us. And then the mom's like, we're done. And then so Jo Beth's like off the case, but she's like, I'm not really off the case. So she goes back to talk to the secretary, but when she shows up at the house, she goes inside, the door's open, and the fucking secretary is dead. And the mom is dead. Like, the secretary was like living with her mom.
She
looks
over and she could see in the bathroom, but she can only see the reflection of the killer's hands and he's cleaning the hook.
In the sink.
And she's like, bogus. And she runs out of the house, gets in her car, and then basically crashes into like a fucking trash can.
It's the weakest a car accident that ever existed.
So weak. But and she loses consciousness.
Yeah, she does.
And wakes up in the hospital.
And what does Tom Skerritt do? He's like, I'm going to take care of you, honey. I'm going to take you back to your apartment. And, you know, you're just going to rest. And then immediately he gets a call.
Well, hold on. We have to talk about this part that happens too. Because he's basically like, what's up with you? You know, you can invite a man into your bed to fucking suck, but you can't bear your soul. And she's like, tells her backstory of why she also doesn't like kids is because
her husband
left her because she couldn't have kids. And he started dating this new younger woman. But then the new younger woman decided that she didn't want to have kids, but her husband was fine with it. And I was like, God damn.
Yes.
Deep, son. That is deep. Yes. But Tom's scared the whole time because, like, he's listening to her and she's about to cry. And then he just starts fucking tongue lashing her and, like, making out. And that's because Tom Skerritt's basically just thinking, like, cream pies without consequence all oh night God. Long.
They do make out in that car. It's like, it's pretty heavy.
It's the only time I've ever seen any drop of moisture on Skerritt's lips.
Yes. Yeah.
Finally, I was like, finally, those thirsty boys got some fucking lubrication. That they fucking so deserved.
Yeah.
So yeah. So she's in her house, and he's like, "Maybe I'll spend the night with you just to make sure nothing happens." And she's like, "Do you want pajamas?" And then the phone rings, and they find out that Elijah has like ran away from home.
Right. He's gone. So he's like, "I gotta go. You stay here. Lock your door." And he leaves. And then after he leaves, she gets a phone call, and it's Elijah.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, I didn't know who else to call. I went to my dad's office." And she's like, "Oh my God, stay there. Stay there. I'm going to come get you." Meanwhile, she's like a concussion. But meanwhile, where does Tom Skerritt get called away for?
Tom Skerritt gets called away because he ran away from home. So she,
oh, they're just
so
looking
he,
for
so
him.
So he
right.
goes to the, to
the
Elijah
house.
House.
Oh, where he talks to the mom.
And as he's at the house, the grandpa's like, "I can't just stay here. I got to go look for him." And he leaves. And at this point, I'm like, is Elijah the killer?
Who's the killer?
I was like, is Elijah like really a midget that was adopted? But then I was like, oh, that's the orphan. Because right. I just got done watching The Orphan First Kill.
Oh, did you?
And I was like, oh man, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to put The Orphan First Kill in this movie, which mm-hmm. would have been amazing if fucking Elijah was actually a midget killer.
Right. Not was, like an 8-year-old.
That was adopted. I would have been yes. like, oh yes. And he basically just wants to have sex with Jo Beth, Poltergeist's right. mom. That's why he's trying to call her to right. Dad's office for so, a little shwakawaka.
So Jo Beth takes a taxi to the office to get to Elijah. And meanwhile, Tom Skerritt is at the house talking to the mom. And the mom's like, oh, you
I knew he was cheating on me.
I knew he was cheating on me. And I had to get back at him. So I did the worst thing possible.
And he's like, did you kill your husband? And she's like, no, it's much worse than that. And then it cuts to them, her with, Elijah at dad's office, and you hear something outside, and she's like, stay in here and hide. And she goes downstairs, and none other than Pep Pep, A Christmas Story Kolchak, comes out with the fucking hook, and he's like, yeah, I'm fucking your dad. Your dad's bitch. Yeah, Elijah.
So you find out that the mom, to get back at her husband, fucked his dad, the grandpa. She was fucking him. She's like, he was here and he was so strong.
Not fucked his dad.
Fucked the grandpa,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Fucked his dad. Yeah.
She was fucking grandpa.
She was fucking his grandpa. Yeah. So then it cuts when Elijah's like, it cuts and it basically shows the Captain Hulk look back, and it's the grandpa wearing a Captain Hulk wig, like fucking the mom. I fucking lost my mind, Steph.
I was
standing and applauding at my television, like throwing popcorn at the screen. I was so happy.
But there's this whole other thing where they talk about how, like, after the death of the grandmom, the grandpa like lost his shit, and the dad was gonna have him committed to a hospital. Mm-hmm. So mom was sleeping with grandpa, who was not mentally well,
but he probably was like so crazy that he had that like aggressive crazy dick.
Oh my God.
Because she was said like he grandpappy was so strong like Scott, and he was here. That was her prerequisites, yeah. to have fucking suck time with someone strong and just be available.
Oh my God.
So that's it.
So back at the office,
she swiped left on that motherfucker. She saw Grampy's profile.
Jo Beth is like, we have to get out of here. And she's like, I'm going to lock you and little Elijah in the office by yourself and try to get away from crazy Pep Pep. So
what's best part? When she basically escapes and gets outside the building, and she goes back to her taxi because she took a taxi there.
Oh yeah.
Because
and
her car crashed.
She's like, use your thing. Call the police.
And the taxi driver's like, I'm dead. I can't do anything. And she's like, oh no, you're dead. You can't do anything. And then she runs back and she's outside the window of the office where Elijah is, which I guess they repaired because they threw a fucking stork through it earlier. And she's like, Elijah, or whatever your real name is in this movie. And she's looking out the window. Fucking Pep Pep power jumps through the fucking window, all 80 years of him, which is like, what do you think? That's like two stories off the ground also, this window.
No, this one was on, this window was on the first floor.
Okay.
It was. But it was still below. High, it was still, below the office.
But still kind of high up.
It was high.
Like 8 feet up at least off the ground.
He fucking launches himself through
his
window.
Head first through the window, lands on the ground unfazed.
He's fine.
And he's going to fucking kill this bitch.
Yeah.
Right by the fucking docks. And Elijah's looking out, and Elijah's whole story to this was like he couldn't call out when his dad was dying and he wanted to do something
like
to help.
He felt like he could have saved him, but he didn't.
And so just as fucking Jobeth's about to get the fucking hook in her by Captain Hook, Grampy, Elijah's like, Grandpa! And the dad and the grandpa snaps out of his psychosis.
Yes.
And
he throws his hook in the water.
And just like leans on the fence, and then Elijah comes out and like hugs Jobeth, and then she lets him walk over to Crazy Grandpop, and as he's going over to Crazy Grandpop, like caressing his grandpop's hand, finally fucking dry lip Scarrett comes up on the boat, and he like comes up with his gun, and he's like, little Elijah's like, this is my grandpop, please don't hurt him. Even though he killed my dad in cold blood and I witnessed it.
Oh my god. And then he holds his hand and he walks him over to the cop.
So convoluted. Like, it's so convoluted, but I don't mind it.
Oh my god.
Because anytime there's any interaction with the grandpa in this movie, he's completely normal.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing psychotic about him.
No.
There's nothing weird about him. There's nothing that would lead you to believe that he should be institutionalized. No. So I'm like, why were they going to institutionalize? Maybe he was right. Maybe he should have killed these fucking people. Maybe they were fucking with him.
Yeah.
He's old and dumb. Let's put him in a fucking home. No. That's when that happens, you get the fucking sickle. And I wish my only, and I said this to Steph when we were done watching this, my only misgiving with this movie is I wish he would have killed the mom, and maybe the mom told the police on her dying breath that that's where Elijah was at the office or whatever, because I wish Elijah would get adopted by Jobeth at the end.
Yes, and, happy family.
And Tom Skerritt.
Yeah.
And, because basically what happens is he holds Jobeth's hand, and Jobeth, Elijah, and Tom Skerritt just walk into the out of frame.
Yeah.
Like together.
And then the made for TV movie music cues.
And that's the credits. Yeah. That is it, man. That is the fucking movie.
Oh my God. It's so good.
So good. So good. I hope you did watch it. And if you didn't, hopefully you got some enjoyment out of it. And even though it got spoiled for you, I still think you should go and watch it.
Oh my God. Fucking watch it. Because enjoyable. We just glossed and, over a lot of things.
Well, it's worth it. And also don't take it to be like a slasher movie. Don't take it to be like an actual horror movie. Just take it to be really terrible, awesome, made for TV movie with terrible exposition, terrible characters, terrible dialogue, but in all the opposite ways that made Kids vs. Aliens terrible,
yeah.
It makes this movie a fucking 10.
It's so good.
They get it. They get this shit. Yeah. And I miss movies. Like, man, you remember made for television movies? These just, obviously they don't exist anymore, but like, there were so many terrible ones made, uh-huh. especially in the 90s, that are like awful, but you're like, I want to rewatch this terrible made-for-TV movie. And this is definitely one of them, and I never watched it.
Never seen it either.
I never even heard of it until fucking Vinegar Syndrome put it out, the box set, but do yourself a fucking favor and check it out, because you will not regret it. And even if you just want to watch a little Elijah Wood, if you have any love in your heart, I love Elijah Wood
so
to this day.
Me too.
He is just...
He's a fucking treasure.
He's a torchbearer for the fucking horror genre and fucking cult genre too. He's just super cool fucking dude. If I was able to be friends with any celebrity in real life, it would be Elijah Wood.
Oh my
Wood.
God, me too.
No, you would leave me for him.
I wouldn't.
He'd be like, you're so weird looking. Let me ride you. No. And I'd be like, no, Steph, what about me?
I think part of that though is that I feel like we grew up with him, you know? Like we
really grew up with him because like he was in a lot of like movies we grew up in when we were really young.
Yeah.
And then in our 20s, Lord of the Rings came out, yes. and we were reintroduced to him and we loved him all over again.
Yeah. And then now he's doing some weird shit that we
and
love.
Now in our 30s and 40s,
yes.
he's doing weird cult shit. And I'm like, Elijah, you have done no fucking wrong in my life. Oh. I kind of wish Macaulay Culkin did that. Like,
yeah. He just got weird. That kid had a lot of family bullshit though.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like I liked when I did see him on Royal Gemstones and I was like, I wanted him to just be a fucking permanent character on that show. Cause I want to see Macaulay Culkin. I love him. Yeah. I want him to do weird shit too.
Me too.
And he could, but he's just not doing it. That's a 10 out of 10 as far as my movie rating system goes. I mean, I will not give it anything lower than that because
me too.
Cause I cannot, when movies just, this is a movie that like, you know, you're like, I wish people would be like, I wish it just took it there with the gore. I understand, But you know what it did take it there with? Misogyny. And I fucking, if, and you can fucking make me forget about the gore if you just want to be misogynistic and terrible human being. Because I'm like, man, these people really thought this was cool shit to say.
Yeah.
I can't fault you for it, like, man.
It was totally acceptable in 1990 to talk to somebody this way.
I just love, I mean, like, I don't love it. Like, I wouldn't like be like, if I saw somebody talking to a woman like down the street, I'd be like, you're a piece of shit. But to see the different, like, just the way things were back then, where it was totally fine to just talk to a 40-year-old woman like she was like 12.
Right.
So you chip your fucking nail, use your fucking pussy bleeding yet, you fucking asshole. And you're just like, wow, dude.
But it's also that thing of like, and it probably still happens now, but it was definitely like 80s and 90s movies where like an attractive woman fucking bangs like a like a troglodyte.
Straight up troglodyte. And listen, there's nothing wrong. Like, Steph was watching this movie and she's like, Tom Skerritt reminds me of your dad. And I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. Like, not like how he acts, but like the way he looks.
The look.
I know, you're totally right, because she's a fucking gorgeous drop dead 10 in this movie for me, at least. And then you look at Tom Skerritt and you're just like, he looks like warmed, lukewarm oatmeal.
Yeah.
Like with a coat on. Like, his face is all droopy and drippy and his eyes are barely open. And he's got the weird, like, mustache that looks like it's like fucking a coral reef that's dying, some kind of crustacean. He's just not a good looking dude, and he's an asshole on top of that. So yeah. It's like, why do you want to fuck him? He's a fucking total dick.
But the thing is, from the very beginning, you know that they're gonna fuck.
Oh, you do.
You do.
It's sad. But also because TV movies do that. Yeah. To you. They're like, yeah, they're fucking. That's why I knew, like, the second Tom Skerritt came in, he was playing mind games with her, where it was a mind game where it was like, eventually I'm gonna fuck you.
Yeah,
like, he said that to her, but through his mind,
right?
And she should have known that, because she's a psychologist.
Yeah
10 out of 10. Recommend, do not recommend Kids vs. Aliens. Same. But unless you can watch it for free and you're just bored out of your mind. Yeah. And that's not hate to the director. I want you to succeed, my man. I want you to do something better next time.
Yep.
You ready to do some outro shit here? Yes. Real quick?
Yeah.
A new merch drop. We dropped a bunch of new merch on our web store. Web store's relaunched in full effect. You probably already know that. If you don't, saylovesatanpodcast.com. Click on the menu and then click on store and you can get yourself a bunch of new shit. We dropped Say Love Satan Synthwave tea. Say Love Satan Death Metal tee, Tales from the Clits back, stickers, hoodie, long sleeve, designed by Beyond Goods. It's all on there. And what we're going to do is, the first of every month, we will be dropping new stuff. And I want to try to keep up with that throughout the year, because we have a lot of old designs I'm going to bring back. We have some new designs. We have our brand new Sodom and Gomorrah long sleeve tee.
It's so awesome.
It's got a print on the front, print on the back, and it's got print down the sleeves.
Oh, yes.
That's fucking rules. And so you should pick that up when that drops March 1st. That'll be dropping. We will be releasing our roundup of best worst horror of 2022 and our Conan the Barbarian episode in March. We'll also have our first Patreon $100 tier listener submission in March. I will not reveal what that is until it gets closer. We were supposed to release our roundup earlier, but shit happens. Sometimes shit happens within the family, where family things happen within the family, but we don't discuss them with everybody else. But it's family shit, because we're failed seeing podcasts of family.
Uh-huh.
So we got pushed back to March. And anyway, finally, next episode we'll be releasing. We'll probably be, maybe we'll do a Where the Books Are Buried, but it depends, because Steph is kind of busy right now. But me and Steph have intentions of doing another Where the Books Are Buried. I'm almost done A Child Alone with Strangers, which is a really cool 80s Robert McCammon mixed with 80s King. It's a real treat. I'm going to talk about that. And when Steph gets around to finishing up her school, she'll read one and we'll knock that out. But I think the next thing we may release, me and Steph, will be our new endeavor into podcasting, which will be fun.
I'm excited.
Kaiju. I think it's going to be Kaiju. And hopefully you guys love that. So until next time, we'll see you again in the cities of sin, in Sodom and
Gomorrah.
Because of the end of civilization, the Clamp Cable Network now leaves the air. We hope you have enjoyed our programming, but more importantly, we hope you have enjoyed...